And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to talk about the attack on workers as the GOP and their Democratic handmaidens pursue the no rights at work agenda. No minimum wage for you. No paid sick days and flex time. What could be better than having the right to have flex time? Never mind that you won't get overtime or anything. Never mind that. Don't look behind the curtain. It's good for you. Take it. Kind of what they're doing to us, folks. We're also going to talk about Social Security and the savings. I love that. I love the frame. We're saving Social Security by destroying it. Also going to talk about guns, knives, and bombs. Lots in the news about all of those. Voting made easy, voting made hard, and the voting game being rigged. Also going to talk about the too big to jail banks and students saying, you know what, enough's enough already with these budget cuts. Enough is enough already. Ready with the cuts to education programs and, of course, this ridiculous testing regime. Also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can also email me during the program, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So yesterday we talked about the testing, this educational testing. In fact, we were in D.C. for 2 days, last week, Thursday and Friday, and you'll want to check out the podcasts there at the website of our coverage of the Occupy the DOE 2.0. A lot of really good information, a lot of good stories. And, you know, brought me back with more information, with a better sense of what this whole testing regime is about. I had a good understanding of it before we went to this event. When I came back, I felt I had all the information that I needed to make an informed, educated decision on this. And today I went to my daughter's school and I said, you know what? No more of this testing. And how the whole thing works here in Pennsylvania, if for you to opt out of your child opt out of the test, is you have to go to the school. So I had to go in, I had to examine the test. And they give you this booklet, and it's like, I can't even tell you, I'm not allowed. Sorry. Had to sign a confidentiality agreement. One that they've had a couple of typos in, but still, the confidentiality agreement that right here, that says I can't talk about the test. It's like Fight Club. Can't talk about test, can't say test exists. None of that. So I got to examine the test, and I don't even want to tell you what's in it because, well, I'd be sued under penalty of law. In fact, it says I understand the violation of the terms could result in personal liability for damages caused by a breach of test security, including but not limited to liability and or costs associated with any of the following. And then they go through a whole bunch of things like, you know, retesting the kids and remaking the test and of course all the research and the development of these proprietary tests that are owned by a for-profit corporation owned by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania Department of Education and of course administered by the for-profit, by this private company, not my kid's teacher, but this company. So I had to sign this confidentiality agreement stating basically that I'm not an undercover agent and I'm not there to get the questions to help children cheat. And, of course, like I said, reminded me that it's proprietary, even though they misspelled that word. So I went and I did this. And here in Pennsylvania, the only way you can opt out is to say that you have a religious exemption. So I wrote them, I said, look, and I had to write out a little thing saying this is, you know, I'm opting my child out. And what I wrote is, look, the only recourse the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has given me to save my child this abuse, to save this overburdensome pressure is to say that I have a religious exemption, which, quite honestly, just anybody who lives by the golden rule in any religion, the ethic of reciprocity, do unto others, judge not and ye shall not be judged, all of that stuff, there's a religious basis for it. But, you know, the reality is while that's part of it, the bigger part of it is the picture that comes along with what brought me to this point. Now, we've talked about all of the other things. We've talked about The fact that these tests really do nothing diagnostically to help my child move forward. We've talked about the culture of the testing, where my daughter was telling me they basically put newspaper over everything. It's a very sterile environment, and it's very cold, and there's no fostering of learning whatsoever. We've talked about that. We've talked about the profit that goes out, the money that's spent on these tests, and again, it's to produce data to help destroy public education. Because understand, the whole idea of these tests, gotta make sure that children are passing the test, because next year, the 95% of the kids who have to take the test in order to meet the qualification to be even considered to make AYP, 100% of those kids have to pass the test next year, which we all know, and I'm sorry to say this, it's just not going to happen. And it was designed this way. Because, look, you can go outside and I can say, I can walk up to 100 people and I guarantee 100% of them are not going to tell me it's dark outside or it's light outside or the sky is blue. There'll always be something else. So by saying it has to be 100%, you know this game was rigged to destroy it from the beginning. You knew that. You knew it. And we were talking about this back in when they passed this monstrosity of No Child Behind Left back in 2001. We knew this. But for me, it came down to something much more personal. And we can get into all of the other reasons. We can get into the testing and all of that. But for me, it came down to very personal. It came down to my conversations with my daughter. And I had several of them. When she told me, when I asked her about the test, she said, "I can't tell you what's on the test, Dad. They'll fail me." And you could see her demeanor, very defensive. "I can't tell you what's on it. We're not allowed to talk about it. We're not allowed to talk about what happens during the testing. Can't talk about it. It's secret. Can't do it." And you go, "Wait a second. They're telling you, you can't tell me what the test was? You can't tell me what happened?" No. And very a matter of fact. And I got to be honest with you, very uncomfortable with that. Then she tells me, "Dad, I really, these tests are extremely important because if I fail this test, my school is going to fail. And if my school fails, the school is going to lose money and the school will close. I don't want the school to close. I like my school. I like my teachers. So if I fail, then the school will fail and the money will go away." And I'm sitting there and I'm going, hold on. Explain to me how it is that a fifth grader needs to know that. The fifth grader should be focused on, I need to do the best that I can do and learn what I need to learn. I've had a couple people say, "Well, what do you got against testing?" A bunch of stuff against this test. I have nothing against diagnostic testing. I have nothing against saying, you know what, at the end of the week of learning, you learn this, you learn that. Let's have a test to see what it is you know. And what you don't know, we're going to work on so that next week we can make sure that you do. These tests don't do this. And this is where I think a lot of people have a misconception about this whole testing regime, that they think that somehow this is diagnostic testing. The test results of this PSSA test don't come out until summertime. And the kids don't see it until next year. So explain to me all this high-pressure testing, how it's benefiting my kid right now. And the answer is it's not. What it's all about is it's producing this data that they're going to use to destroy public schools and privatize it. It's that simple. But bringing that home to things that are personal, I talked to my daughter. She said, "Look, when I said, I don't think I want you taking this. What do you think?" She goes, "Dad, I have to take it. I have to pass it. Because if I don't pass it, I'm not going to be able to take future electives. I'm not going to be able to take home ec when I get into high school. They told me that if I don't pass it, I can't take these electives. I'm going to have to take all of these really hard classes, and I'm going to have to take all these math classes and all these reading classes because I didn't pass this test now." And I'm going, "Really? Who told you that?" "Well, that's what they tell us. Oh, I'm not allowed to tell you what happens during the test." So back again, she opens up, she closes back up. To me, that's not right. That's not the kind of educational environment. That's not the kind of nurturing environment that I want to see. And the biggest one, and this is This is the one that my wife and I talked at length about. For those who have kids, especially young kids, how they play, what they do when they're playing with their imaginary friends or they're playing with their brothers and sisters, that tells an awful lot. Kids work things out in play that are on their mind, that are their struggles, are their crosses, all the things that they're working through, they bring out in their play, especially younger kids. Here I have my 10-year-old who wants to be a teacher in the worst way. And I got to be honest with you. I am working diligently to try and discourage that. And the way things are going, trying to discourage that as much as I can, because what we're doing to education is more about creating an environment of factory work than actual educating and helping kids to explore and to learn. So that's a whole nother argument. But she's playing teacher with her brother and sister. And, you know, her brother's 6, just turned 7, sister's 4, and she's the 10-year-old teacher at the front of the classroom. We set up a little classroom type area in their playroom, where there's a little chalkboard kind of thing, and because this is what they do. And she is, in a very stern manner, talking to the other two, saying, you had better do this, and you had better learn this, because if you don't pass the PSSAs, the school's going to fail, and you're going to have nowhere to go. This is how they're playing. This is how she play teaches. She's play teaching to the damn test. How is that good? And, you know, I had a couple of conversations today, people saying, well, you know, the kids have to learn how to do this stuff. No, they don't. Kids need to learn how to take tests. I agree. I took a lot of tests as a kid going through school, and most parents do. We are living, and the reason I have brought this up, because originally I thought I'm just going to do this and I'm going to do it silently, and I don't want to be the face and out in front of this. But having numerous conversations with people who think it's when we were in school, when I was back in school and the tests, you know, the Iowa basic skills were, you never got the results. And it wasn't that high pressure. They didn't heap the, you know, the fate of the school is on your back. And if we fail, it's your fault. Look what they're doing, trying to do in Tennessee. What are we doing to our kids, man? Look what they're trying to do in Tennessee. They're going to tie, they want to tie welfare. They want to tie the supplemental nutrition program and TANF to the kids' grades. It's not bad enough that you have now saddled every kid in this country in public schools. You have saddled these kids with the fate of their schools, the fate of their teachers, the fate of their communities. Now you're saying, you know what? You know, that's not enough. We want to make sure that on your back at 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, we're going to say, well, if you don't get good grades, your family doesn't eat. Think about what we're doing to this generation. This is not when we grew up, folks. The tests that we took are not what they're doing today. Look, I remember when I was going to college, and I went and I took the ACTs. I know I have a lot of friends who took the SATs, and you may remember that, how rigid and how cold, and because this is like an entrance exam. And you've got this high pressure. I knew people who struggled for days. Explain to me why we want to have that kind of testing for third graders, for fifth graders. Explain that, because I don't get it. That kind of pressure should not be on the backs of a third grader or a fifth grader. Sorry, just shouldn't happen. Because what we're doing is we're turning those kids off to learning, and we're turning them away. And we're going to make things that much more difficult. And that is why I made the decision that I made. And I'm not saying that others should. I'm saying that you should look at your conscience and you should look at this whole thing. And look at all of the scope. Look at the fact that next year, in 2014, 100% of the kids must pass that test or the schools will be labeled failing. And half of that teacher who's standing in front of that classroom, half of their compensation, half of their evaluation is based on those tests that 100% of the kids have to pass or they fail. Explain to me then what we're going to do to get teachers, because they're not going to stay. They're going to look for other jobs. They're going to get out of this. Because what you're going to then do is you're going to foster an environment much like you had in Georgia, where it's just about the test, man. It's just about passing this test, because the test is about the money. Instead of talking about what education is really about. And to me, education is about the next generation of critical thinking citizens. Not little worker bees. Not people smart enough to push the button and never asking why, but about people who can critically think, can analyze, can filter facts, and can call BS when they see it. And I'm telling you, these tests, BS. I'm going to take a quick break, right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm interested. What do you think on the topic? Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he would not cut Social Security. We want the president to remember what he said and not go back on his word.
U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a rally protesting President Obama's proposed Social Security cuts. Sanders delivered 2 million petitions opposed to the cuts to the White House. AFL-CIO says Social Security cuts are unconscionable. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says her union objects to Obama's proposals to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits. Social Security pays for itself and doesn't add to the national deficit or debt. Any future shortfalls can be eliminated by simply raising the income cap on Social Security taxes. No Social Security taxes paid right now on income above $113,000. Senator Sanders says Obama needs to keep his promise not to cut Social Security, and tens of millions of people must mobilize to stop the cuts.
To rally tens of millions of people who understand that in this country, the middle class working families are hurting and we're not going to balance the budget on their backs. Our job is to rally those people and give anybody in the Congress who believes in cutting these life important benefits, we're going to give them a political choice they can't refuse. And that is, if they vote to cut Social Security, they may well not be returning to Washington. Thank you all very much.
4 million workers are missing from the labor force as high school graduates face grim employment job prospects. Jesse Russell explains.
A new report from the Economic Policy Institute finds that the primary reason for the drop in the unemployment rate is due to 4 million workers missing in the labor force. According to the report, this is due to people dropping out of the labor force or never entering it because of weak job opportunities. If those workers were being counted, the unemployment rate would be 9.6%. High school graduates entering the job market and not going on to higher education have it the worst. EPI economist Heidi Shearholz.
The unemployment rate for young high school graduates is 29.9%. This is compared to an unemployment rate of 17.5% in 2007, so it's extremely elevated relative to its pre-recession level.
A second number that is often overlooked in unemployment reporting is the underemployment rate. Underemployment includes situations where a worker is employed part-time but wishes they could find full-time work. Currently, the majority of high school graduates entering the job market are underemployed.
High school graduates, the underemployment rate is 51.5% compared to 29.4% in 2007.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Yeah, you're looking for experience. You're looking for someone with a proven track record. With the climate change about man-made global warming in this country. And everybody rushed to say, oh, we need to do something now about this huge problem. I didn't change. I stood tall and said,
This is the end.
This climate science of man-made it global warming was not climate science, science, it was political science.
This is the end. My only friend, the end.
Oh, well, what can you do? Our good friend there, Tricky Ricky. I always love thinking about Santorum. We were up for the primaries, the 2012 primary up in New Hampshire, being one of the radio programs on the Radio Row. And the Santorum surrogate, the Santorum handler, told the person who was booking guests that under no circumstance would Santorum come and talk to us on the program. Under no circumstance. He would talk to everybody else, but not us. And I got to tell you, I kind of take that as a badge of courage and a badge of honor. Anyway, welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Bill on line one. How you doing tonight, Bill?
I'm okay, Rick. How you doing?
I have been worse, but I'm getting good.
Well, I understand your problem there with your daughter's school. It's pretty disgusting when you think about it. But,
I mean, what they've done to education in this country, Bill, is an absolute shame, because it's not the school that we went to.
Well, no, and it's what they're doing to everything. And I think the key thing to remember is Goldman Sachs is God. That's what you have to remember. That's what it's all about. Money, money, money.
Yep.
And not for us. Mm. And I guess he never had him on before. I heard an interview with Paul Craig Roberts. I believe you know who that is.
Oh, I've had Paul Craig Roberts on the program before, sure.
That's what I thought.
Former Reagan Treasury, Assistant Treasury Secretary. Kind of a middle-of-the-road guy, a mixed bag. He's the guy who brought us a lot of the problems, but he's woken up to some of it.
Oh, he's basically on our side, believe me. And I heard an interview with him not long ago, and I'll tell you what. It really tied everything together for me. And he's got a new e-book out. And basically what he's saying is we don't have a government anymore. We've got corporations, the banks, Wall Street, and the politicians. And it's basically all one thing at this point.
So I would say it's just the corporations and the big money. The politicians are nothing but tools that have been used.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he said that. But, I mean, it's all basically one mixed bag, and they obviously scratch each other's backs. And here again, we're left out in the cold, you know. But he said that at this point, and he's never been quite as so gloomy before, but he's saying we're in the midst of three gigantic bubbles. One of them is the stock market. One of them is the bond market.
And one of them is student loans. And the student loans.
Well, yeah, but we're talking about the huge ones now, which in the next one is the dollar itself. And he said any one of the three or all three could go. If the dollar goes first, he says, what's going to happen? It's going to be worldwide. It isn't just going to be us. It's going to be what he's calling a inflationary depression. And he said there's never been anything like it before in history. And, you know, frankly, it scares the hell out of it. And I think, you know, a lot of things that are going on, if you start connecting all the dots, I've come to the conclusion a long time ago that these guys, and by these guys, I mean, you know, the powers that be and certain of the insider politicians, I concluded a long time ago that they know that stuff's going to hit the fan. And they basically are only interested in their own well-being. I think they know it's coming. And all the things they're doing, all the stupid things they're doing, and the sideshow things, you know, North Korea, the crap with Syria, which, I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing of all. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's plenty of things that are ridiculous. But I really, and it's even with the gun stuff, I really believe these guys know something really bad's coming, and they're only looking out for themselves. And I'll tell you what else Paul Craig Roberts said. He said, ultimately, where this is heading, and he said, it's not, he can't give a date, obviously, but he says it is coming, and it's probably coming pretty soon, and that's a nuclear war.
Yeah, I'm not as gloomy as he is, and I've read the pieces that you've cited.
Can I give you one other thing that, and I hate to be such a bearer of bad news, but can I give you one other point of information that frankly scared the hell out of me? Not from him. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know who Michio Kaku is?
Yep.
Okay. I heard Michio Kaku on Coast to Coast, and he was pretty upset. And the gist of the problem was he had, whatever scientific group he belongs to, I believe he said it's 1,500 or 1,800 members. They're very, very, and this is the world's top scientist, they're very, very concerned about the possibility of the grid shutting down, either from a coronal mass ejection or from a cyber attack or from an EMP burst. You know, there's a number of things that could do it. So he and these other scientists put together a plan to harden the grid, to harden the substations and all that, which is so they could withstand an event of that type. Well, he was very upset, and basically what happened was it was tabled in some committee and never even allowed out for a vote. And, you know, he's saying, you know, you really need to contact your congressman, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, basically, you got to ask yourself, Rick, honestly, why, and he said this fix would be about $50 million. Why would these guys not even bother to debate this or look into it or consider it for a vote? Something that could be that critical to our very existence.
Yeah, I
mean, when you consider what could happen just with the nuke plants, if they didn't get power, it wouldn't take long when those backup systems shut the hell down, and it's going to get ugly real quick.
Yeah, I can't speak to what he was talking about one way or another without knowing exactly what he was talking about.
I understand.
And the investment. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, I do believe there are some, and this is where I'm going to be the optimist here. Mark this on the calendar, because it's rare that I am the optimist.
Well, that's good. But Rick, you got to, at the same time, you've got to kind of,
No.
Do a little precautions.
Yeah, Bill, you know? Look, I've been talking about for years about the dollar as the reserve currency and the problems associated both with it going away and with us having it. Look, the BRIC countries, they're attempting to actively get away from the dollar.
Absolutely.
Because that gives them power. I don't see it in our lifetime. A lot of people love to talk about, oh, it's going to happen and it's around the corner. It's like the end of the world, people. I can't tell you how many times the end of the world's been coming.
No, I heard all this. I'm a lot older than you, and I've heard all this junk as long as I've been alive, and I got very cynical about it, too. But I have to take people like Paul Craig Roberts very seriously. I know there was even a couple of...
And I do, too. But, you know, here's the reality, and this is where I'm at with this. We've heard this time and time again. The reality is financially as a nation, we're not in horrible position. We've got some structural problems. We've got some problems, yes. We're not Greece. We're not Portugal. We're not Spain. We're not Cyprus. We're not those countries. We have a problem, but at the end of the day, it's not that huge. It's not massive. We can fix it with smart policy. The problem is the politicians.
We could fix it if we had people who wanted to fix it, who were actually making an attempt to fix it. But it seems like anybody who does attempt to fix it either gets marginalized or shot or you name it.
Well, this is why this is the reason that I have hope, because I do believe people like you, people like me, people like who listen to this program, we're the ones who are going to be able to. We're the ones who have to change this country. We've got to figure out, one, how to get money out of politics first and foremost. Just because a billionaire's got $1 billion doesn't mean he should get a billion votes.
Absolutely.
And until we do that, to me, that's the single most important key to this. When they can buy radio hundreds and hundreds of stations, and you've got five companies who own 80% of everything we see, hear, and read, there's a serious problem with our democracy.
That's absolutely right, but the big question is, how the hell do we do it? I know you're talking about it, I talk about it, but, you know, it seems like there's not enough people waking up fast enough.
Well, I mean, at the end of it, for me, it's about turning off the idiot box. It's about turning away from corporate-controlled media. It's about actually doing something that my grandparents' generation did. You know what they did? They went to their churches and they talked to their friends and neighbors. They went to their community organizations. They became part of the community. You know what my grandparents did? They knew who their neighbors were. Think of that
as
a concept.
Rick, my generation took to the streets. I don't understand this.
No,
with all these ridiculous wars and everything, I mean, what the hell is going on? Well, I guess it's because it's not a draft anymore.
I'm not sure about that, but, you know, because there were people in the streets fighting against the Iraq war. Our media just didn't cover it. There are people in the streets every day. In fact, a little bit later on in the program, we're going to talk to some kids who over in New Jersey said, you know what, we're not doing this testing thing anymore, and they walked out. Did the media cover it? No.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. Don't be despaired, Bill.
I'm not going to throw any more rain on your parade, Rick. But I appreciate what you do, and I don't like to be little, but boy, I'll tell you, it is crazy anymore. It is.
And that's why the saner thought heads have to solve it. Bill, I appreciate the call, man.
Take care, Rick.
Thanks so much. Great talking to you. No, look, I get the whole Paul Craig Roberts thing. I've read a lot of Paul's stuff. In fact, for a while, he was so despaired that he stopped writing. He's come back, and there's part of me that goes, you know, he has gotten to this point to where he's in that despair moment that, you know, it's now gloom and doom. I don't see things as bad as that. I think we can change things with some reasonable policy changes, some smart investment, and some smart decisions by the electorate, by you and me, putting people into the positions of power who aren't beholden to these big multinational corporations. And understand, business friendly in this country is not about your local corner store or not about the local hardware store or Main Street. It's about global Wall Street. Business friendly policies benefit. Where's our governor right now? Our governor's in São Paulo. He's in Brazil, sitting with a big multinational corporation. Why? Because they want to bring the multinational corporation here. It's not about investing in startup companies here, investing in mom and pop and that entrepreneur who's going to start that next big business. It's about, hey, let's lower conditions. Let's make things worse all over the world because we're willing to have worse environmental standards and lower wages and no benefits. We're willing to do that. We're willing to outcompete China based on who's willing to work for less. We're willing to do that. Bring the jobs back. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the jobs. Jobs. Remember, we were told, 2010, jobs. We'll talk a little about what the Democrats did on Tuesday and our governor in Brazil. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
Hi, my name is Ethan. My dad is a sanitation worker at Republic Services. My dad spends a lot of time away from home doing the fourth most dangerous job in America, but he is invisible at work, and Republic Services does not treat him with the respect he deserves. Support us on Facebook at facebook.com/Republic Services Teamsters. Thank you.
I like the word lift. It implies upward progress and a can-do communal spirit. Yes, let's all put our backs into it and lift this load. It's so American. That's why I was intrigued to see the emergence of a new group called the Lift America Coalition. The acronym stands for Let's Invest for Tomorrow. And boy, is that overdue in everything from public education to development of a green economy. But then I peeked behind the shiny Lift America logo and, uh-oh, there was Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, Eli Lilly, IBM, Intel, Pfizer, Procter & Gamble, Xerox, and, well, all the usual global giants that constantly want Washington to do special favors for them. Despite its uplifting name, Lift America is nothing but another corporate lobbying and PR front trying to dupe our Congress critters into giving them a lift. In particular, they're crying for a lower corporate tax rate, wailing about antiquated U.S. tax laws that are threatening America's economic competitiveness. Big bad government, they preach, has saddled these poor giants with a 35% tax bite, one of the highest of industrialized nations. So Congress must whack that rate to make America, quote, a more attractive place to invest and create jobs. Not so fast, Slick. First, these super-rich powerhouses are masters of the tax-dodging and loophole game, so the rate they actually pay is not 35%, but 12%, and many of them pay zero. Second, they've already slashed their commitment to America not only by offshoring jobs and eliminating our middle-class future, but also by reducing the percentage of our nation's revenue that corporations pay from 30% in the 1950s to less than 8% today. This is Jim Hightower saying, if corporations think Luxembourg is more attractive than America, move there.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. 'Cause the $1 million man always gets his way.
Sorry, always gets his politician one way or another. I mean, you look at the money that went into electing Tom Corbett governor. You think of all the gas money, all of the drilling money that went into him. You think about all of the education privatization dollars that went into his campaign. You know, it's you look at the people who are funding the guy, and it's no wonder. It's no wonder where his allegiance lies. Right now, as we speak, he's in Brazil, I guess, maybe on his way to Chile for his meeting this week. Again, you know, funded by Team Pennsylvania Foundation, which is who? A bunch of big corporations. A bunch of big multinationals. On a business junket, because we're going to bring jobs to Pennsylvania. And, you know, part of me goes, that's a great thing. You know, creating new jobs. How about retaining some? And like we talked about yesterday, GE locomotive plant out in Erie that the GE has said, well, we're going to move that to Texas. 950 union jobs, 100 management jobs on the chopping block. Where's the governor on that? Well, nowhere. He's in Brazil. He's in Rio de Janeiro trying to attract tourists to come to Pennsylvania. Now, really what he's there for is to cozy up the mining, the chemical people, you know, the gas and the oil people, you know, solidify that relationship. In fact, the article I saw today, in the Pittsburgh newspaper was saying that Corbett had spoke with reporters from the headquarters of an international company the chemical company. Braskem SA is the name of the company, a Brazilian company. They've been buying up chemical assets throughout the country for the last several years. They bought out Sunoco Chemical in 2010. They've got a headquarters in Philadelphia. The jobs junket. And, you know, part of me goes, how much are we giving away tax-wise? You know, to me, the Corbett plan seems to be free money. And I know he said, you know, the free market, but not so much. Anyway, House Democrats on Tuesday came out with a jobs package. Remember in 2010 when the Republicans said jobs, 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 their pledge to America? You know, they're big fans of pledges. They said, you know, we're going to create jobs, laser-like focus, jobs, jobs, jobs. Yeah, it's... we've seen, well, nothing on the jobs front. Anyway, House Democrats, they unfurled their jobs plan, the centerpiece of their economic platform. Steny Hoyer was one of the main spokespeople there saying that we're going to, because it's called Make It in America, they've rolled out this idea of promoting exports, strengthening trade enforcement, hiking infrastructure spending, and eliminating tax breaks for corporations that move jobs overseas. They claim that it will help bring down unemployment a little bit. The center part, of course, is is repealing the tax handouts, the perverse incentives for corporations to then move overseas and, you know, offshore their profits elsewhere. Because I'm telling you, you know, a lot of our problems are pretty simple. It's we have gone through this whole we need to be business friendly. And look, big business has done an amazing job of promoting this idea of the benevolent corporation who gives you things. You know, we give you health care, we give you pension, and we give you safety on the job, and we give you a wage, and we give you all of these things. And I've got a lot of friends who truly believe that the corporation, out of the goodness of their heart, because they love them so much, and they're such valued members of the workforce, that they give them all these things. Without thinking that, you know, there were generations who, like Bill, were in the streets fighting for, hey, we want safe working conditions. We want decent wages. We want some health security, some retirement security. We demand it. And the last generation or two keeps giving that back. Oh, well, you know, we got shared sacrifice, got to make concessions, you know, we got to keep the wealth class well wealthy. And when it comes down to, you know, we need to help workers, not so much. And you look at the Republican idea. The Republican jobs plan is pretty simple. Cut taxes. And I ask you, when was the last time we cut taxes that it created jobs? Hasn't. So they're, understand what their plan is. Cut taxes for the wealthy corporations, austerity for you and me, and gut regulations. So we have no say in what happens to our environment. We have no say what happens in the workforce, and austerity for further education and healthcare and all those things, and tax cuts for the wealthy. Which leads me back to what Bill talked about in the last segment, which is there are some who know that the ship's going down, and they're just sucking what they can out of it. Personally, I think we need to wake up, and we need to wake up quickly, and we need to get involved and active. Simple for me to say. And you look at today, for instance, and this is one of those moments where you just go, really? The Republicans, every one of them voted against the Paycheck Fairness Act. You know, the thing that says that a man and a woman should make the same for doing the same job. Virginia Fox, the Republican from North Carolina, was on the House floor today. She said that the bill was a liberal plot, you know, to kind of paint Republicans as anti-woman. I don't think you need a plot, Virginia, to paint the Republicans as anti-woman. I think it's right there front and center. Shall I point to the committee hearing on women's reproductive rights that had no women on it? Just a thought. And let's talk about the idea that and we hear this a lot, you know, Republicans care about workers. They care about middle-class families. They care about working families, you know, especially those women who make 77 cents for every dollar that a man makes. They care about that. Well, today, the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, a subcommittee on workforce protections, had a panel because they wanted to talk about the Working Families Flexibility Act. Love that name. Oh, makes it sound like you're getting something, doesn't it? We're going to have some flexibility for family, yes. Now, as the bill, the euphemistic name there, it makes you think that you're going to have more time with the family. In fact, that's how it's being promoted. You're going to have more time with your family. You're going to have flexibility. There's no more of that overtime. No, there'll be no more overtime. You'll have flexibility. Understand what this means? It means you're going to have less time, you're going to make less money, and you're going to have less flexibility. You're going to have less flexibility. The company, on the other hand, oh, they're going to have lots of it. They're going to save money on wages by working you 100 hours a week, so they don't have to pay you as much. They get you when they want you, and they get to discourage you when they don't. And then they don't have to pay unemployment for laying you off for a week because, hey, that's comp time. It's flexibility. You know where this is going. You see, understand. Back when they passed the Fair Labor Standards Act that enacted a 40-hour work week, I thought it should have been a 40-hour work week. That's it. This way we hire more people and demand a wage that you could live on 40 hours. Because I got to be honest with you, I guess I'm kind of old-fashioned. I think on 40 hours labor, you should be able to support your family. Should be able to eke out a reasonable existence. I just how I feel. But this is going to undo the Fair Labor Standards Act. Because the idea is going to be, we can work you 100 hours if we want. If we've got 100 hours worth of work, you just need to be more flexible, those, which means you don't see your family for that 100 hours. And then next week, if we're not going to pay you overtime, you can have the whole week off when we don't need you. And maybe we keep you on call. Do you think anything good is going to come of it? I don't see it. And I look in Philadelphia, for instance. You know, we've talked about the paid sick day movement. And there is movement across this country to get communities to mandate that employers within their borders offer their employees paid sick days. Well, Mayor Nutter, the Democrat, vetoed the piece of legislation, the bill that would have had given some very meager paid sick days to workers, about 100,000 Philadelphia workers. He vetoed it. Well, the city council doesn't have the votes now to override the veto, so congratulations, citizens of Philadelphia. You got screwed once again. Sad, sad stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Questions, comments, love to hear with you. What's on your mind? 1-888-520-RICK. Quick break. Right back.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
You often hear the mass of our Milky Way galaxy is equal to several hundred billion stars, like our sun.
Now, some astronomers are suggesting more mass for our Milky Way, 1.6 trillion suns.
The new estimate is based on the first ever measurement of the proper motion, or sideways motion, of a small satellite galaxy to our Milky Way. Our galaxy has some two dozen known satellite galaxies. This one is called LEO 1.
If you knew the size of the orbits of these Milky Way satellites, their speeds in orbit, and how long they take to orbit our galaxy, you could use the laws of physics to calculate the amount of mass in the Milky Way. But our human lifespans are short in contrast to the lifespans and motions of the galaxies, so these numbers are hard to come by.
Astronomers used the Hubble Space Telescope to compare LEO 1's position in 2006 and 2011 with more than 100 background galaxies to obtain the first measurement of its proper motion. Then they used that number to estimate that LEO 1 orbits at 200 kilometers per second, nearly as fast as our sun.
But LEO 1 is much farther away than our sun from the galaxy's center, and that means the Milky Way must be much more massive than previously believed. The new mass estimate is 1.6 trillion solar masses. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Milky Way mass. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
If this was done under Rendell's administration, the GOP would be jumping up and down like Rumpelstiltskin. I just want to make that point. I mean, the Republicans would be going nuts. Yes, yes. All right. Yes, 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 yes.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. So Obama has the budget out, and the response from the Republicans, well, I think it could be best summed up by Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, who said, well, just another left-wing wish list. John Boehner said, well, you know, every family has to balance its budget. Well, Washington should blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah. Sorry, that was a bad attempt at crying like John Boehner. But here's the thing. I mean, there are some winners, there are some losers in the Obama budget. They're saying, Washington Post is saying the winners, Medicaid pretty much spared from the axe. Medicare saw about, going to see about $370 billion in cuts. Now, there's a lot of discussion around that. You know, a lot of it's cuts from the Medicare Advantage program, which should have never been enacted to begin with. It was just another one of those poison pill things to destroy Medicare. Some of the winners, they're saying, according to the Washington Post, low-income workers, they're going to be two tax credits. I'm a big fan of the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit. I think it helps working families, and I think it helps lower-income workers. I think it rewards work on a certain level. We should be raising the minimum wage so that employers have to pay it. But as a matter of policy, it seems to me to be rational and reasonable. Also, the White House has proposed delaying the $500 million in cuts to payments to hospitals. That seems that they're saying the hospitals are a winner. And funding for non-defense science and research. Researching, you know, drugs, stuff like that, things we need for a society, seems like a smart investment to me. And also, the White House has proposed $40 billion to invest in our highways, our bridges, our transit systems, our airports, our infrastructure, which is sorely in need of investment. The losers, they're saying, hedge fund managers, Wall Street, basically, because you're going to pay higher taxes. The carried interest loophole they want to do away with, which just seems to me to be rational. I'm sorry, I don't see if a guy makes a bet on Wall Street, makes $4 billion in a year, pays less of a percentage of his wages in taxes than I do or you do swinging a hammer or driving a truck or whatever it is we do. The losers also, for the higher income folks, they're going to pay a higher premium for Medicare, you know, for the supplement programs and the such. They're also talking about budget cuts that come from farm payouts. The agribusiness could see a cut of some $38 billion, which I think is probably something we absolutely need. Now, here's my problem, and it comes down to the chain CPI. The losers, I think, are the working people, because you look at this idea of, well, you know, we need chain CPI. And look, Obama's throwing this out there. They're saying, well, you know, I included the changes to Medicare and Social Security, you know, to bring the Republicans to the table. You know, wants them to come and, you know, like, he's serious and he's going to negotiate. The chain CPI thing? Republicans not impressed. They want more. This is too meager for them. What Obama has given them is a tool to go after Democrats and say, look, working people, Democrats were going to sell you down the river. They were going to cut your benefits. Not saying that we would have cut them by twice as much, but that they would do it even a little bit. And Democrats, some of them are furious. I, for one, furious. Bernie Sanders, furious. People, furious. Because when they talk about savings, and I love that frame, we're going to go to this chain CPI and we're going to see savings. What that means is we're taking benefits away from you. So understand, it's a benefit cut. They keep saying, oh, no, it's not a benefit cut. No, it's just, and I love this argument. It's so nonsensical, it's comical. It's not a benefit cut. It's just slowing the benefit increase. It's not a cut. We're just slowing the increase. You're slowing the growth. It's a benefit cut. It's a cut. It's a cut. It's a cut. It's that simple. It doesn't get any simpler than that. It's a cut. And a tax hike all at once. Because you and I are going to pay for it and not get the benefit that we would have. What we have in this country is a high-wage loophole because you got to love the enough with the cap already. We've got the high wage loophole that says if you make $113,000 a year, we're going to give you this giant loophole so you can make $4 billion. And all you're going to pay is on $113,000. That's it. So the more you make, the less you pay. For working people, the more you make, the more you pay. Because you're not going to get, I know very few people who make over $113,000 a year. I know some, not a lot. Most people I know make in the $50,000 range. Taxed on every penny. Every penny. Think about that for a second. Now they keep saying, well, it's just a technical adjustment. It's going to making the cost of living adjustment more accurate. More accurate to what? I mean, really, stop and think about this for a while. If it were me and I was designing this plan, I would say, okay, we're going to use a consumer price index, the CPI. We're going to use one based on what seniors actually buy. I mean, if the idea of the cost of living adjustment is to keep, and understand, Social Security is to keep its anti-poverty insurance. It's to make sure that seniors in their final years, they don't end up in poverty. They don't end up deciding between drugs and cat food. So we figure out what it is they buy. They buy health care. Lots of health care. Health care has been going through the roof. Maybe we should look at that. Oh, that's not in the chain CPI, is it? Oh, no, it's not. It's a screw job, folks. It's that simple. And for me, when I look at this and, this idea that a Democrat is putting this forth is just infuriating. And look, Obama's been throwing this out here for a couple of years. They've been floating this for several years. Now it's part of his actual budget. And this is something that everybody, Democrats, Republicans, independents, Tea Parties, liberals, everybody, the polling, it doesn't matter. Everyone opposes this, except for some Republicans who are on board with it secretly, because they understand that this is going to be a good way to attack the Democrats in the next term. So, and part of me goes, I don't think Obama wants a Democratic Congress, or I don't think he'd have done this. It just blows my mind. When we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about it in the second hour. If you missed any portion of the program, therickssmithshow.com, that's where you get the podcast. Stitcher, right back. Stick around.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he would not cut Social Security. We want the president to remember what he said and not go back on his word.
U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a rally protesting President Obama's proposed Social Security cuts. Sanders delivered 2 million petitions opposed to the cuts to the White House. AFL-CIO says Social Security cuts are unconscionable. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says her union objects to Obama's proposals to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits. Social Security pays for itself and doesn't add to the national deficit or debt. Any future shortfalls can be eliminated by simply raising the income cap on Social Security. Security taxes. No Social Security taxes paid right now on income above $113,000. Senator Sanders says Obama needs to keep his promise not to cut Social Security, and tens of millions of people must mobilize to stop the cuts.
To rally tens of millions of people who understand that in this country, the middle class working families are hurting and we're not going to balance the budget on their backs. Our job is to rally those people and give anybody in the Congress who believes in cutting these life important benefits, we're going to give them a political choice they can't refuse. And that is, if they vote to cut Social Security, they may well not be returning to Washington. Thank you all very much.
4 million workers are missing from the labor force as high school graduates face grim employment job prospects. Jesse Russell explains.
A new report from the Economic Policy Institute finds that the primary reason for the drop in the unemployment rate is due to 4 million workers missing in the labor force. According to the report, this is due to people dropping out of the labor force or never entering it because of weak job opportunities. If those workers were being counted, the unemployment rate would be 9.6%. High school graduates entering the job market and not going on to higher education have it the worst. EPI economist Heidi Shearholz.
The unemployment rate for young high school graduates is 29.9%. This is compared to an unemployment rate of 17.5% in 2007, so it's extremely elevated relative to its pre-recession level.
A second number that is often overlooked in unemployment reporting is the underemployment rate. Underemployment includes situations where a worker is employed part-time but wishes they could find full-time work. Currently, the majority of high school graduates entering the job market are underemployed.
High school graduates, the underemployment rate is 51.5% compared to 29.4% in 2007.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So earlier in the week, we were talking about the right wing who's going ballistic. Oh, the Screwquester didn't hurt anyone. The planes aren't falling out from the sky. Those were reasonable cuts. But as we talked about earlier in the week, there are some 5,000 cancer patients in New York not getting the chemotherapy because the money's not there. And we're seeing these cuts, the real effects they're having. And I'm telling you, every day it's going to get that much worse. Which is why I've asked Robert Wiener, former spokesman for the White House National Drug Policy Officer and also former chief of staff for the House Committee on Aging and the Subcommittee on Health, to come talk to us about his piece titled, You Can't Sequester Cancer. Bob, thanks for taking time for me.
It's a pleasure. Rick, I always love talking with you, and it's been, maybe 6 months since we talked last, so good to catch up with you.
I appreciate you taking time for me. You know, I look at this Screwquester, and, you know, the story in New York, 5,000 seniors who can't get cancer treatment, Bob!
That's taken the imagination of the country by storm when people who need chemotherapy are being sentenced to death by the sequester, and a third of the people who need it in some cancer clinics can't get it. There were 18,000 scientists, Rick, in Washington for the American Association for Cancer Research National Convention this week. And they turned from being wonky scientists looking through their microscopes. And my wife was one of them. She is a cancer researcher at George Washington. She discovered a gene activated in 80% of women with breast cancer, and she's working on a suppressor and a blood test, real life-saving situations where she has had grants from NIH, DOD, and luckily she has private sector grants also from Komen and Avon. Most recently, she just got a nice chunk from Avon to continue that critical research that she's doing. But those scientists are saying that NIH has lost 20% of its grant capacity, 20%. Over the last decade, and now they're being frozen into ice. They're being completely frozen out of new grants now because of the sequester. NIH won't give any new grants. They're simply maintaining old grants. And so what's happening is the 30%, now we get a little wonky ourselves, but the 30% reduction in mortality that's occurred in the last 3 decades because of the research, It's stopped dead. We're cutting off our nose to spite our face, and people will be dying now from all the different cancers that are out there, whether it's breast or testicular or prostate, all of the different cancers, ovarian and lung and so forth. That is really ridiculous what we are doing with this sequester.
Yeah,
the Washington Times picked up on it. The Republican newspaper picked up on the piece that we wrote because it's a bipartisan piece. Everybody gets cancer.
Yeah, and I saw the statistics. One half of men and a third of women.
That's right. That's exactly right. 40,000 women a year die from breast cancer. 40,000 a year. 1.6 million people in America get cancer every year. They contract cancer every year. So there you had people like Cokie Roberts, who herself is a cancer survivor, who moderated the rally with these thousands of wonky scientists yelling in tune to the beat of drums, more progress, more hope, more life. And that kind of thing gets national attention. So I'm glad that the piece did take. I'm glad the Washington Times ran it. And it's just part of what we're going through now, Rick. It's a tragedy. It's not only as we've all said. It's not just the scientists and the cancer patients, and that's real. It's kids that are stopped from preschool. It's teachers who won't be having jobs. All these things that affect us. It's nutrition. It's senior programs.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, it's corrections officers who are, like here in Pennsylvania, just before the sequester went into effect, there was a corrections officer killed on the job because he was by himself putting inmates away. It's insane to me that we've gone with this hatchet and we've just taken broad swaths of funding away from vital programs. And when I read your piece, and you can take a look at Robert Wiener's piece at the RickSmithShow.com. Just click on his name. It'll take you there. You Can't Sequester Cancer is the name
and
of
by
it.
By me and by my wife, Dr. Patricia Berg. So we had the technical expertise of the real cancer researcher in it, too.
Here's what frustrates me. I see 18,000 scientists and researchers and people who should be working to cure cancer. I see them out in the streets for a rally when they should be in their labs and they should be funded and doing the work to. Because, hey, you know what? One in two men, Bob, that means one of us.
That's
potentially.
Right. That's exactly right. And one out of three women. So, I mean, it's just a horrible disease. You know, we all die from something, Rick. But, you know, in our lifetime, think of it. It's common sense, as people say. When I was a kid, you know, I'm 66. The lifespan was in the 50s. Now it's close to 80. That's the dimension of what the research has been able to accomplish. And we're going to stop that? We're going to stop that kind of progress?
Can't afford it, Bob. We're broke.
But now, you know,
afford it,
we're
Bob.
Broke because they won't give it, stop the tax breaks for the oil companies. GE. And ExxonMobil that pay no taxes, zero taxes, you know, that kind of thing, and the subsidies for the businesses that get them. And so they want to take it out of seniors. I listened to the earlier part of your show where you were making the points about Social Security and Medicare. You know, Rick, that's where they want to take the money from. I love the guy. I ran the press room for him at the Democratic National Convention. But when he wants to cut Social Security after he said he won't, to me that's outrageous.
Absolutely.
I was yesterday at Obama's Rose Garden budget announcement, and then at the OMB Sperling and the Democratic Policy Council joint news conference afterwards when they amplified the budget, and White House Press Secretary Jay Carney called on me. Can I tell this story?
Sure, absolutely. I was going to ask you about it because, you know, here's the reality is they keep telling us we're broke, we don't have the money, and where are we going to get it? We're going to steal it from my grandmother and my future.
So I asked a question. I asked a question at the press news conference, and they mumbled some incomprehensible answer about the cuts to Social Security and Medicare. I asked, don't the proposed cuts, and I wrote it down because I read from what I wrote. I didn't want to be babbling like an incomprehensible, you know, loony here. So I actually read the question. Don't the proposed cuts to appease Boehner just increase poverty among the elderly? And if you means test, don't you crumble overall support for the programs? And I said, that's what Claude Pepper pointed out about why means testing is not in the program. And I also pointed out that means testing is illogical because the bottom 50% of seniors get 90% of their income from Social Security. So you would totally mess up the program's success by the cuts and revaluing. And I pointed out that Social Security and Medicare have reduced poverty among the elderly from 65% before those programs, Social Security and Medicare, to 7% now. And the transcript of their rambling responses that followed is almost funny if the outcome weren't so dangerous. The way they handled the question, Rick, was the four of them, those four agencies, you know, OMB and the Economic Policy Council, Domestic Policy Council, and the president's chief economic advisor, moderated by Jay Carney, the press secretary. The four of them looked at each other, not knowing quite how to answer the question, and finally they stared at Sperling, because he's the most political, so he picked up and did the answer, and he started talking about how no one will really get hurt, they'll still be getting some benefits no matter what you're making, and the president is fully committed to not hurting any seniors, and no one who needs the help will stop getting it. It's just outright untrue when you're talking about half of seniors get 90% of their income from Social Security. You're taking away their money.
Yep.
That's actually what you're doing. But, so they had no answer to it. And the point that you're making on your show of lobby against this, rally against it, talk to your congressman about it, is really the only thing that you can do. Because I remember when in 1983, as you pointed out, I was the chief of staff of the House Aging Committee, when Claude Pepper made the first save Social Security arrangements that was designed to last for 70 years. We're not 70 years past 83. The Social Security is solvent for another at least 30 years and counting with the money that seniors have paid in. They just want to take the money and spend it on other things.
As they've been doing for years.
And I remember when Pepper even didn't want to make that first deal because Social Security was pretty much solvent. And he didn't want to raise the age from 65 to 67. He said, no, 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 I won't do it. And I remember he was really just no, no, no. He was just very unhappy about it completely. And then he got pushed and cajoled and persuaded, I guess, that it was going to be much worse if he didn't agree to this deal. And that's the same thing that could happen now. People are saying it isn't going to happen. They're not going to do this chain CPI, which translates as $1,000 less money for seniors after a while.
No, Bob, they're savings. Didn't you know we're getting savings?
What does that mean?
It means we're saving. That's all I keep hearing. They're savings associated.
You're taking money from seniors. You're not saving anything.
Oh, no, but we're being told it's savings, so it's savings, right?
You know, Rick, the big picture is, and Obama has said this, is that we spend more than the next 13 countries combined on our defense, and our wars are ending, but the defense contractors are so successful at giving campaign contributions that we're still funding defense as though we're still necessary to fight in the wars that we're not going to be fighting anymore now that he's ending Afghanistan and Iraq and trying to keep us out of other stuff, although the defense institutions, what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, just wants to keep you going in the wars. That's where every country, whether it was Russia that stopped the big funding that they were doing on defense or other countries that fell, with the fall of the Roman Empire and Spain and England, it was because they were over-empired and over-national security spending and weren't taking care of their own people. That's been the fall of every civilization, and it's going to be us if we don't take care of ourselves and stop it. That's the big picture, and we haven't gotten there yet to realize that.
Now, you and your book learning, that just sounds to me like you're anti-troop.
I'm... Do you know that we've spent $4 trillion in Iraq? That's the real dollar figure. The deficit is 16, and then the Bush tax cuts are another 4, and paying for the crash that Bush created is the rest of it. That's the whole $16 trillion of our deficit right there, those three pieces.
Well, I was told that it was all Obama. We were debt-free when Obama took office, and he's
yeah,
done a drunken,
right.
Wild spending spree.
Did people forget that we were $10 trillion as Bush left us the crash, and then we had to spend the money to get out of it? Did people forget that?
Yes. We're an amnesiac society, Bob.
So it's really, we can be out of this debt, but it doesn't have to be on the backs of seniors. We can be out of the debt if we go back to the Clinton tax breaks. We fund defense at a rate that we absolutely should, and we invest in the jobs so that we have a flowing economy and we'll be back in business where Clinton had us rolling into surpluses. That's the real story.
Yeah, you see, jobs not on the agenda. We need to be talking about the distractive stuff. We need to be talking about, Bob, whether Jay-Z got permission to go to Cuba. That's the real cutting.
That story.
That's the cutting issue of the day, Bob. jobs, that's
and we can talk about Dennis Rodman negotiating with Korea.
At least he did that for free.
Yeah, really.
But I mean, the sad reality is you're right. These are the issues that we need to be in the streets screaming about, not just calling the congressman or writing him a polite letter. We need to be getting on the phone screaming at him. We need to be crowding his offices, especially the district offices. Go knock on the doors and stand there.
We make a difference when we actually talk policy and facts and push them into persuasion. You know, it's really tragic, but we're making an inch of headway when we should be making a foot of headway on the gun safety issue. We're making an inch of headway when we should be making a foot of headway on the immigration issue. And you know, we've got to make more headway on protecting Social Security and Medicare.
I'm with you. Again, the piece is You Can't Sequester Cancer, written by Robert Wiener and his wife, Dr. Patricia Berg. We've got a link at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Robert Wiener's name. It'll take you right there. Bob, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time, man.
Rick, thanks so much. Great to hear from you.
Anytime. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. From the top.
Your proud leader of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Earth, sky.
You often hear the mass of our Milky Way galaxy is equal to several hundred billion stars, like our sun.
Now, some astronomers are suggesting more mass for our Milky Way, 1.6 trillion suns.
The new estimate is based on the first ever measurement of the proper motion, or sideways motion, of a small satellite galaxy to our Milky Way. Our galaxy has some two dozen known satellite galaxies. This one is called LEO 1.
If you knew the size of the orbits of these Milky Way satellites, their speeds in orbit, and how long they take to orbit our galaxy, you could use the laws of physics to calculate the amount of mass in the Milky Way. But our human lifespans are short in contrast to the lifespans and motions of the galaxies, so these numbers are hard to come by.
Astronomers use the Hubble Space Telescope to compare LEO 1's position in 2006 and 2011 with more than 100 background galaxies to obtain the first measurement of its proper motion. Then they use that number to estimate that LEO 1 orbits at 200 kilometers per second, nearly as fast as our sun.
But LEO 1 is much farther away than our sun from the galaxy's center, and that means the Milky Way must be much more massive than previously believed. The new mass estimate is 1.6 trillion solar masses. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Milky Way mass. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org. Earth.
Democrats in the Senate are terrified that in 2014, the next election, 20 Democrats are up for election, 10 of whom are in very Republican states. If they try and raise taxes, if they shut the government down because they're having a hissy fit, that they insist on their little tax increase and that they'd rather shut the government down than not get their tax increase, the Democrats will get wiped out in the Senate in 2014.
Don't blame it on the sunshine. Don't blame it on the moonlight. Don't blame it on the good times.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, RickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Andy sent me an email during the break. He said, by the way, the chain CPI, a hit to the solar plexus, knocked the wind right out of me. A massive disappointment with Mr. Obama. He said the Progressive Caucus, their back-to-work budget, he said, I think would beat anything Steny Hoyer of the Democratic leadership has to offer. He says, this is what the country needs, the back-to-work budget. It's a great budget, he says, 84 A's in favor of it. It creates six tax brackets above $250,000. Andy says that this budget generates $4.2 trillion in revenue over 10 years versus Obama's only $620 billion. He said a Democrat that voted against this budget is not a true Democrat. He said the major features reduce the deficit by $4.4 trillion over 10 years, cuts defense spending, raises $4.2 trillion in revenue, Wall Street trading transaction tax of $352 billion, which I am all in favor of. It fills the tax loopholes, you know, gets rid of the oil and the gas and the Wall Street carried interest and all the outsourcing, all of that stuff gone. You know, lots of things in this, as he points out. But what do we get from Obama? Well, we get the screwquester, we get the chain CPI, and more of the same bad trade policy. Because the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement still being discussed under the radar, it'll be one of those things that just pops right through. And I go back to this chain CPI thing. Look, as a nation, we have allowed business-friendly to really take over. I mean, honestly and truthfully, you look at what these corporations have gotten away with for the last 30 years. And last Monday, we were in West Virginia. The mine workers who worked for Patriot Coal, I shouldn't even say that. They didn't even work for Patriot Coal, 90% of them. Most of them worked for Peabody Coal or one of the other, Magnum Coal or any of the other coal companies that created this entity designed to fail. They're out in the streets because their pensions and their healthcare is being stolen from them. We've given these companies the ability to destroy the future of our retiring generation. And what do? We allowed them to get rid of defined benefit plans. No defined benefit healthcare, retirement plans. God, those are going. In fact, I saw a number, almost 85,000 pension plans have vanished since 1985. 85,000 gone, done. Right through the bankruptcy court, written off, and somebody pocketed that money. And you know who it wasn't? It wasn't the people who worked for it. It was the executives. It was the CEOs. It was the big industrial, the investment houses. The institutional investors. And the sad reality is without a strong, robust Social Security, and I think at a time like this, having lived through the Great Recession, the Great Bush Recession, we as a working class should be going, you know what, we need to strengthen Social Security and not cut its benefits, not have chain CPI, which has savings. It has savings, Rick. Savings, yay, savings. Problem is those savings mean Granny has less money. That means when I retire, I'm going to retire with a lower standard of living. Instead of saying, and look, the American people are on board with this. Study after study shows workers, they would give up higher wages. Workers don't really want more vacation or bigger bonuses or any of that stuff. What they want secure pensions that are going to give them security in their golden years. That's what they want. That's what they've invested in. And you talk to some of these retired miners and the steel workers and these workers who have said, you know what, we forgave wages. We said, you know what, we're not going to take higher wages now. Put it into the pension so that when I retire, I don't have to worry. Well, they've destroyed that. And now they're saying, oh, by the way, Social Security, well, you know, hey, we know it doesn't contribute to the deficit. It was set up so that it would never contribute to the deficit. But, hey, we're going to conflate the two things and put them together so we can steal that. And we can have a desperate senior class. Understand, the Bush recession, had it not been for Social Security, my grandmother would be living in poverty. Understand, if she was saddled with a privatized Social Security, one that invested heavily in Wall Street, she would be sitting on a pile of rocks in the middle of nowhere because she'd be broke and unable to work. I know. She's breathing. She can do something. Pay her a buck a day. Because that's where we're heading, man. I saw this a report recently by the Employee Benefits Research Institute. And you know what they found? I mean, this just blows my mind. 57% of American workers have put away less than $25,000 for retirement. 57%. Just 3 years before, it was 49%. And it's getting worse. The sad reality is this chain CPI, what this is going to mean, that if you retire at 65, you're going to lose about $650 a year. Those are the savings. And who are they savings for? I say it's a screw job for everybody, because you know what? That $650 a year that was in the pockets of seniors and me when I retire goes right back into the economy. But this is about, one, in my view, creating that desperation class, making sure that, you know what, you don't retire. And two, and I think more importantly, it's about enriching the top and giving them the power and the control and keeping us on the treadmill, working day and day and day. The thing that infuriates me about all of this, you look at this 401k nonsense, and it was a loophole. It was a way to hide money at first, and they thought, oh, gee, this is a great idea. We can shift over from the defined benefit plan that had given a couple of generations security in their old age. We could flip that over to a gambling scheme, or we could take money from it. We can get fees. And they've destroyed that, and all of that defined benefit, that security in old age. And they've given us, well, basically lottery tickets now. And when they decide they're going to come and take it back and they crash the economy again, what do you end up with? I was just looking at my 401k statement. And I am now finally back to where I was before the Bush collapse. I'm not getting those years back. The years that I thought everything was going to grow, and you know, they used to say every 7 years your investment doubles. Well, I've lost almost 5 years, right? Not coming back. And so has virtually every working person in this country. And when you look at the statistic, 57% have no retirement, have $25,000 or less, basically nothing. Kind of makes you wonder. Kind of makes you think. You know, and I remember Mitt Romney talking about the 47%. You know, the 47% of people don't pay federal income tax. Not because they don't want to, but because they don't have it. I wonder if those people who don't have retirement, the 57%, I wonder if they're paying attention. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to a student who was part of the walkout in Newark, New Jersey. Part of the folks, kids who are saying, you know what, enough of these massive budget cuts, enough diminished opportunity, enough already. Quick break, right back.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
I like the word lift. It implies upward progress and a can-do communal spirit. Yes, let's all put our backs into it and lift this load. It's so American. That's why I was intrigued to see the emergence of a new group called the Lift America Coalition. The acronym stands for Let's Invest for Tomorrow. And boy, is that overdue in everything from public education to development of a green economy. But then, I peeked behind the shiny Lift America logo and, uh-oh, there was Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, Eli Lilly, IBM, Intel, Pfizer, Procter & Gamble, Xerox, and, well, all the usual global giants that constantly want Washington to do special favors for them. Despite its uplifting name, Lift America is nothing but another corporate lobbying and PR front trying to dupe our Congress critters into giving them a lift. In particular, they're crying for a lower corporate tax rate, wailing about antiquated U.S. tax laws that are threatening America's economic competitiveness. Big bad government, they preach, has saddled these poor giants with a 35% tax bite, one of the highest of industrialized nations. So Congress must whack that rate to make America, quote, a more attractive place to invest and create jobs. Not so fast, Slick. First, these super-rich powerhouses are masters of the tax-dodging and loophole game. So the rate they actually pay is not 35%, but 12%, and many of them pay zero. Second, they've already slashed their commitment to America not only by offshoring jobs and eliminating our middle-class future, but also by reducing the percentage of our nation's revenue that corporations pay from 30% in the 1950s to less than 8% today. This is Jim Hightower saying, if corporations think Luxembourg is more attractive than America, move there.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
I keep reiterating that the student's not going to take it. Like, we're not going to take it. Like, not in the literal sense, not in the serious sense. We need to have the solidarity.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website for ricksmithshow.com. So we're seeing across the country that there are people who are saying enough is enough already. And when last week when we were in Washington, D.C. for Occupy the DOE 2.0, we talked to people, educators, activists, students, you name it. We talked to people from all around the country who are saying, you know what, this whole testing regime, it's a major screw job, which is one of the main points that I opted my daughter out of the testing regime here in Pennsylvania. But we're also seeing students saying, you know what, enough of the diminished opportunities, enough of the defunding. And here in Pennsylvania over the last 2 years, working on the third year, $1 billion each year has been stolen from public education. We're now working on that third $1 billion that our governor made sure that he gave away to big corporations. And what's that mean for my kids? What's it mean for the next generation? Well, it means larger class sizes. It means less opportunity. In New Jersey, for instance, the students are saying enough already, and we are seeing organizing that excites me across the country, which is why I've asked one of the students who is one of the organizers of the walkout the day before yesterday. He's one of the Newark students. His name is Tejas Marquez. He is one of the students who, not there. She. Tejas, thanks for taking time for me. Thanks for prepping me for that. Are you there?
Hi.
Thanks for taking time for me. Tell me what's going on here.
Sure. Well,
Newark is one of the many urban communities that is suffering from a $50.1 million cut in their budget because of Chris Christie's new budget proposal.
$50.1 million from the Newark school system?
Yes.
And what is that? How is Newark going to end up paying that? I understand it's one of the poorest communities in the country.
Yes, it most definitely is. So by losing $50.1 million, we're losing so many opportunities as students. We have schools that need the funding more than anything, and that's just being taken away in order to give tax breaks to wealthy individuals or to privatize schools through charter movements.
And I understand you guys have a pretty robust charter movement there, as the corporations are eagerly anticipating getting their hands on the school district there.
Most definitely. Here in Newark, just this year, charter schools were receiving 17% of our budget in comparison to only 15% for public schools.
So let me ask you, you know, here in Pennsylvania, the charter schools get paid before the public schools get dime one. The charter operators get paid in whole first and foremost. Is it that way in New Jersey?
Yes, it's becoming that way. We're seeing increasing costs to our budget because of charter schools, and there's increasing enrollment to charter schools because they have the argument that charter schools are much better than our public systems, when that is only true because they are taking away money from our public schools to destabilize them.
No, I mean, if you have 60, 70 kids in a class, if you've got less, you're laying off all these teachers and you're not investing, and of course, another option is going to be better for the short term.
Exactly.
But what happens down the road? And, you know, I got to ask you, you know, as you've seen the cuts go into effect, what's it meant to your class size? What's it meant to the instruction that you're getting?
Yeah, we're already seeing increased class sizes. Even at the magnet schools, which are the gems of the Newark Public School System, they're allowing more students to come in and just not giving any funding for the comprehensive schools, which are already failing as they are. Cami Anderson's stance is that if you want to fix something, you destroy that something. So we are clearly seeing that with the destabilization of public schools.
But we see that a lot. We're saving Social Security by destroying it. We're saving Medicare by destroying it. We're saving public education by defunding it and destroying it. Yeah, it seems to be the MO.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, I mean, the students, and good on all of you for standing up and saying enough is enough. What got this organization going where, like I understand, the day before yesterday, you had a number of students who walked out of school in protest. And off to the budget meeting, is that where you ended up?
Yes, the New Jersey State Assembly hearing.
What percentage of the students did you get to organize and to walk out with you?
At least 1 out of 10 students from the Newark Public Schools walked out.
Wow, and how'd the school respond to that?
Well, we have had several different responses. For some schools, we were able to walk out, but for others, such as Eastside High School and Arts High School, the principals completely locked down the school so that no student would be able to leave. And if they so happen to leave, these students are now suspended.
So they locked you in?
Yes.
Well, that's the answer. That's the right answer. And what did the parents of these kids say? Because I got to be honest, if you lock my kid in the school, I'm going to go ballistic.
Right now, there isn't much of a parent backlash, mostly because the spokeswoman for the Newark Public School System blatantly lied to the media, saying that there have been no repercussions and that they did nothing to stop us from walking out, which are just lies.
So what are the students doing now? Like I said, you know, I thought this was very successful, something I think that should be going on all across the country. What are you doing next?
Well, we definitely want to become more engaged on a national scale against the corporate reform of education. And whatever it takes, we're willing to make alliances with students from across the nation. And we really think that students can mobilize because we're so full of energy and we really have the right mindset.
Well, at the end of the day, this is your future. This is the one opportunity, the one shot that you've got to move ahead. You know, I'll be honest with you. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, and education was that way out of it. And no matter what problems are, what opportunities that you have for the future is based on what education you get. And by standing up and saying, I demand that I get a good quality education, I see nothing wrong with that.
Most definitely. Yeah, we definitely are ready to fight for our education because, as you said before, it's the only way that we can really have a future for us, for ourselves.
So how is your governor? I can't imagine that Chris Christie thinks this is all such a great idea.
Chris Christie has said nothing. Chris Christie, Cory Booker, and Cammie Anderson are in complete silence about the entire walkout. That's how we know that they know that they're wrong. You know, there's no good reason why they can take away money that they owe us under the law. So I believe that's the reason why they have to be silent.
How much of this has to do with the testing regime? You know, here in Pennsylvania, it's the same way across the country. We've got this No Child Left Behind that mandates that everyone take these standardized tests. And next year, 100% of the people taking the tests have to pass them, or schools are going to lose tons of money. And I look at my daughter, who's just distraught by these tests. And I got to be honest, I said no more. She's not taking them, opting out of the system. How much of this is part of that?
Oh, 100%. The way that they judge urban communities is solely based off of standardized testing, which disproportionately disadvantages us, since we don't have access to preparation for them. And even so, standardized tests do not measure the intellectual capability of a person or the growth that they've had in the classroom. And the worst part is that they use our quote-unquote low test scores in order to take away our money. Like, they use it as a justification for it, which is horrible.
No, I mean, in talking with my daughter, who's 10, she said to me, and it was, and maybe you can attest to this, having taken these tests in the past, it was clammed up. She's got, I can't tell you about the test, Dad. I can't tell you what's on it. I can't talk about what happened in the testing room. I just can't. And if we fail the test, they're going to take our money and close our school down. And she was distraught by this. And, you know, to me, I'm going, wait a second, you can't tell me what's on the test? You can't tell me what happened in the test? And it's this whole militaristic kind of prison kind of system that just scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, we're drilled in our minds to bubble in a letter and think that that's what's going to get us into a good college, when in reality it's not the way it's supposed to be at all.
I just, you know, and you know, I got to be honest with you. I'm glad to see that there are people organizing. And I'm, how many of these students that did this walkout? How many of them that this was their first action, that their first act of civil disobedience?
Anyone that walked out that was a freshman, sophomore, or junior, this was their first time. The seniors were lucky because 3 years ago a similar movement occurred when the seniors organized a walkout in 2009. So this would be our second time, but everyone is their first.
You know, the reason I thought this is so important is there's something empowering about what, and maybe you can talk to that a little bit about the empowerment maybe you felt when you stood up and said, you know what, I'm going to fight for what's mine.
Yes, it was a very empowering moment when we were able to mobilize and be unified. It was amazing how we all came together for this one cause. And I was lucky enough to be one of the people to testify in front of the New Jersey legislators, but it was at that moment when I realized that we needed so much more, because after I gave my speech, the only thing that the legislators could say to us was, we'll keep you in mind.
Thanks.
But
next.
No assurance that they would actually fight for us.
Yeah, and to me, I got to be honest, you know, what we're doing to public education is an absolute crime, and what we're doing to public education in places like Newark, in places like my home city of Cleveland, places like New Philadelphia and Chicago, in my view, just criminal.
Yes, it is.
I appreciate the time. I appreciate the effort. When you guys do something else, we'd love to have you back on and talk about it.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. You know, again, I go back to this, and it's this kind of empowerment. It's this kind of organizing and this in the streets activity that we should be doing much more of. In fact, Granny, you're next. Granny, you better get organized. They're coming for your Social Security. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk.
For the homeless or the poor, who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, my name is Ethan. My dad is a sanitation worker at Republic Services. My dad spends a lot of time away from home doing the fourth most dangerous job in America, but he is invisible at work, and Republic Services does not treat him with the respect he deserves. Support us on Facebook at facebook.com/Republic Services Teamsters. Thank you.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Last year, 120,000 people over the age of 60 in the United States of America had their Social Security payments garnished because of student loan debt. It is a multi-generational crisis. And anybody who has, you know, sweated over their sons and daughters' student loan payments knows that it's not just about students. It's about all of us.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, I listened to that, and look, you know, if you're the parent of that young girl, you got to be proud as hell. I mean, to be willing to stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to fight for the future, my future, I'm going to fight for the future of education. I just, you know, and I thought about it today. You know, I was thinking about my daughter and what, you know, we had a long conversation this morning when I finally decided that, you know what, enough of this already. Enough of this insane testing. Enough already. My wife and I had talked about it, and, you know, when she tells you, I can't tell you what's on the test, Dad, there's a problem. I can't tell you what goes on in the testing room. It's secret. There's a problem. Taking this burden on her shoulders, saying, you know what, if I fail, the school fails, and they'll lose money, and it'll close. That's too much of a burden for a fifth grader. Just too much. And, you know, we've got to be supporting this next generation. And I know, man, you know, I had a number of these conversations today with people who, oh, wow, you know, it's just like, it's we think it's just like it was when we were in school. And it's not even remotely close to the truth. The profiteers have gotten their tentacles into the system. They've gotten their grubbing hands into the pot. And they like it, and they want more. So what do they have to do? Well, they have to say that the schools are failing. See, we didn't have failing schools when I went to school. They didn't have it. They didn't label them like that. What they've done now is they've created this testing culture. Because we all like to think, well, you know, hey, you take a test to see what you know. And all the kids should know the same things. This way, you can have a bunch of statistics and a bunch of numbers. And when you generate all those numbers, then you can start assigning them. With the sole purpose of saying, you know what, wow, we needed to fund these and move money somewhere else, you know, to the profiteers. This was a very well thought out scheme. And, you know, there are some who think, well, you know, Congress just threw this together and, they just dreamt it up. That's not how this kind of legislation gets pushed through. There's a couple of decades of thought that went into this. Why do you think the wealthy in this country fund these think tanks at such a huge rate? Why do you think there's so much money into these scheme tanks? Why do you think that is? Because they're figuring out the next way to stay a step ahead of everybody else so that they can benefit. Because they didn't become wealthy by being stupid. They understand return on investment. They know that they spend, you know, several million dollars on creating one of these thought tanks who comes up with the next idea of how to scheme the public. Just like you got the Tinky Tank here who's been shilling to sell off the wine and spirit shops because you know what? Hey, big business understands. Huge profit for them. The media culture understands, hey, there's going to be a lot of advertisement for wine and spirits and beer. Lots of advertising opportunity means money. So you don't hear the other voices. Same thing with the lottery, man. I mean, all of this stuff is, how do we skim from the public? You know, the same people who keep telling us government's bad, same people who keep telling us that, you know, we need to save the taxpayer, they're the ones who are fleecing the taxpayer at such an amazing rate. And this whole push to privatizing education, there are right now lobbying firms being set up all around. There are groups being set up to shield this stuff. I was on my way to work, heard four or five ads for different education services and different, I forget the name of the one, Brain Power or something. Oh, they're like family. They treat our children like family. And the Connections Academy and, oh, you name it, all of these oh, it's public school. Doesn't cost you anything. Yeah, it does. It costs diminished opportunity for our kids. Because the profit that they take out of it, folks, is money that doesn't go into the classroom. For every radio ad that you think about this for a second, think about, and this is really very important. For every radio ad that you hear on the air, that's $100, depending on the station, $50, $100 per ad that didn't get spent on educating a child. For every billboard that you see on the road, that's like $3,000 of money that didn't get into the classroom. For every newspaper ad, for every social media ad, for all of the wonderful seminars and all of the sales pitches and all of the people at the fairs and all of the stuff, all of that outreach to get you to buy into the charter schools, those are tax dollars. That's money that's not going into my classroom to teach my kid. All of the money that's being spent on this testing regime, all of this money that's being spent on creating numbers, not really giving a rat's behind if my kid's learning or not, but creating numbers and creating the numbers that's going to destroy the very school that she's working her butt off to try and save and worrying her little heart out that she's going to fail the school and the school is going to close. They've created this culture that it's about the money. The testing company, they get paid with tax dollars. That's not going into that classroom. That's not hiring the extra teacher. Tell me that that's right. I mean, I'm dying for someone to come up with it. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. I would love to hear the thought on it. Because I don't see the value in it. And again, as I've said in the past, you know, when I was in school, and this is going back, you know, 30 years, the teacher went into the office, zipped off some tests off the mimeograph machine or off the photocopier or whatever, and slapped the test on in front of you. You took the test, you turned it in that night, you graded it. The next morning, you had your test results. And guess what? You had instant feedback, what you knew, what you didn't know, what you needed to work on. Not this high price. Look, you know, I remember taking the ACTs when I was going off to college. I can't imagine doing that as a third grader or a fifth grader. Does it make any sense to you? I know we like to think that, well, we need these tests to prove the kids are learning. That's why we got teachers. That's why we have professionals. And that's why you have oversight. And look, I'm not against testing. I'm against this kind of testing. You know, when Neil Bush, and I go back to when No Child Left Behind became law. And I guess you follow the money in anything. When Neil Bush started Ignite, the educational, basically the testing company, you knew that the gig was up. You knew what was going on. You knew that was the direction the wealth class was going to go. And now you see the Bloombergs of the world. You see the Rupert Murdochs of the world. You even see the Warren Buffetts of the world. They're investing in it. Why? Because they know that's where the growth is. That's where the big money is. Because no parent, me, you, no parent wants their kid to not have the best opportunity possible. No parent wants their kid to go to a quote-unquote failing school. But understand this, and really understand this. In 2014, when every kid has to pass this test, every school will eventually be a failing school. Unless you think it's possible that 100% are capable of passing that test. And maybe it's just that, you know, maybe it's just because I live in the real world that I think that's not possible. And now you think about, you know, just take it to, you know, we just went through March Madness. Think about basketball. You can't get 100% of the kids to make a layup. You can't get 100% of the kids to, when playing baseball, to run the bases the right way. I don't see how you can have this very, very stringent, very hard line. I just don't see it. It thinks that every kid is an empty vessel. And they're on an assembly line, and we're just pouring information into their head for them to regurgitate. That's not the education I want for my daughter. Let's take a quick break. Back with hour three of the program. If you missed any portion of our program, therickSmithShow.com or Stitcher on the smartphone. Quick break. Back with hour three. Stick around.
Because I'm going to leave it in the ground. Mr. Taft and David, Mr. Harlington Hall, and Mr. Reagan can supervise the crew. And if they find it too hard, they got the National Guard to fix the bayonets and shovel like fools. He's going to take a lot of long and an 80 short day for his miner to cool on down. Mr. Tap can dig it, Mr. Harley can haul it, 'cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he would not cut Social Security. We want the president to remember what he said and not go back on his word.
U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a rally protesting President Obama's proposed Social Security cuts. Sanders delivered 2 million petitions opposed to the cuts to the White House. The AFL-CIO says Social Security cuts are unconscionable. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says her union objects to Obama's proposals to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits. Social Security pays for itself and doesn't add to the national deficit or debt. Any future shortfalls can be eliminated by simply raising the income cap on Social Security taxes. No Social Security taxes paid right now on income above $113,000. Senator Sanders says Obama needs to keep his promise not to cut Social Security, and tens of millions of people must mobilize to stop the cuts.
To rally tens of millions of people who understand that in this country, the middle class working families are hurting and we're not going to balance the budget on their backs. Our job is to rally those people and give anybody in the Congress who believes in cutting these life important benefits, we're going to give them a political choice they can't refuse. And that is, if they vote to cut Social Security, they may well not be returning to Washington. Thank you all very much.
4 million workers are missing from the labor force as high school graduates face grim employment job prospects. Jesse Russell explains.
A new report from the Economic Policy Institute finds that the primary reason for the drop in the unemployment rate is due to 4 million workers missing in the labor force. According to the report, this is due to people dropping out of the labor force or never entering it because of weak job opportunities. If those workers were being counted, the unemployment rate would be 9.6%. High school graduates entering the job market and not going on to higher education have it the worst. EPI economist Heidi Shearholz.
The unemployment rate for young high school graduates is 29.9%. This is compared to an unemployment rate of 17.5% in 2007, so it's extremely elevated relative to its pre-recession level.
A second number that is often overlooked in unemployment reporting is the underemployment rate. Underemployment includes situations where a worker is employed part-time but wishes they could find full-time work. Currently, the majority of high school graduates entering the job market are underemployed.
High school graduates, the underemployment rate is 51.5% compared to 29.4% in 2007.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Neither of these things absolves us from blame. So speaking of the senior management team and myself, while we can't assure you we won't make mistakes, We can assure we're going to try not to. These were egregious mistakes. They were self-inflicted. We are accountable. And what happened violates our own standards and principles by how we want to operate the company. This is not how we want to run a business.
You know, that's an interesting frame, that they're accountable. I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing the accountability at all. And I love that. It's not how we want to do business. We'll try not to screw up the economy again. We'll try not to crash the economy. We'll try not to. We promise. Scouts honor. Anyway, today, Senator Elizabeth Warren was questioning Daniel Stepano of the Office of Comptroller of Currency and Richard Ashton of the Federal Reserve about the independent foreclosure review, basically asked the question if they were going to provide any information, any evidence of illegal activity to the families who've been screwed over through wrongful foreclosures. They said they hadn't made the decision. She went on to say that people want to know that their regulators are watching out for the American people, not for the banks. And she asked, she said, the only way that we can evaluate whether or not you're doing your job is to make some information publicly available. And it would be nice to know what these two big to fail banks have done to crash our economy, which is why I've asked Alexis Goldstein, former VP at Merrill Lynch and Deutsche Bank, now a contributor at The Nation. She's written the piece, Foreclosure Review Report Shows That the OCC Continues to Bury Wall Street's Bodies. Alexis, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
So I look at the statement by Senator Elizabeth Warren asking, you know, hey, are you gonna provide any of the information of these illegal activities? They hadn't made a decision.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing has been a whitewash from the start. The OCC basically started this thing called the Independent Foreclosure Review to make the banks look a little bit less terrible in the wake of the foreclosure crisis. On the surface, they were trying to help as many harmed borrowers as possible, and many people have had illegal foreclosures sent against them as possible, but really this is about the bank's bottom line, and it was really a backdoor bailout the whole way through. And the reason I say that is because there have been some numbers put forward in the past that banks saved basically $25 billion by deliberately underinvesting in their servicing arms. And what I mean by that is just the mortgage servicer that the banks own. These are the people that get your monthly payments. These are the people that are supposed to help you get a loan modification. So they basically made them ineffective and mistake-ridden on purpose because it was cheaper. And what do they care if a homeowner goes into foreclosure? And so now they're having to pay $3.6 billion in cash. But what that turns out, what that looks like in practice, is if you, this is just one example of something that comes directly out of the settlement. Let's say you had a loan modification approved, but the bank didn't communicate with itself, and it foreclosed on you anyway.
Right.
You get $500.
Wow.
Yeah. You don't get your home back, but you get $500.
Well, you could get a nice hotel room for that.
Right. Or maybe a tent or a dollhouse.
For a night. No, I mean, but you know, I didn't see that story. What I saw is I saw the big story of Bank of America that was going to pay the service members who got screwed over. They're going to pay them almost $117,000 plus compensation and interest, and lost home equity in the whole nine yards for these 316 service members who got kicked to the curb. And I asked the question when that story came up, what about all the millions of people who got screwed over? And what you're saying is $500, huh?
Yeah. And another example is there are people in this settlement that were never in default, that always made their monthly payments. They were completely current. They were still foreclosed on anyway by these criminal banks. They get $5,000. Again, they don't get their home back. They don't get these documents that Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Sherrod Brown are asking for so they could try and build a case, but they get $5,000. So maybe they can buy a really fancy tent.
I look at this and I go, well, explain to me why there's not a raging call to break these too big to fail banks up. I mean, I'm missing this. And you know, I remember when this first happened, when the housing bubble first collapsed, and on the air, I said, look, what has to happen is we nationalize these banks, break them up, go back to small regional, go back to, you know, small community banks, because the community banks haven't had the same problems that these big banks have had.
That's a really good point, and we don't see the small community banks. They were not a part of this initial independent foreclosure review. They were the biggest banks. They were J.P. Morgan Chase. They were HSBC. They were Bank of America. They were Citigroup, and we don't see these kinds of abuses at the small community banks. And I think this is like the perfect story for why too big to fail needs to be addressed. We need to break these banks up, because the other aspect of this story, and this is something that came up in the hearing today, is the OCC allowed the banks to choose their own consultants. And the consultants that they chose were consultants they've worked with before, like Deloitte or PricewaterhouseCooper, or this one consultant that I'd never heard of before, this story called Promontory. And these consultants have an incentive to keep working with the banks, so of course they don't want to make the banks look bad. They want the banks to look good, and so they want to bury the bodies for them.
Are you surprised by this? I mean, you know, we've got a Supreme Court that says that, you know, workers who sign employment contracts, who say that in the fine print that they'll go to an arbitrator, to arbitrate any employment issues, and the employer gets to choose the arbitrator. We have situations where we have people calling for regulators to regulate themselves. I'm not surprised by this in the slightest.
I'm not either, but we do see some response now. Finally, there was a bill that just came out today from Congresswoman Maxine Waters' office, and it was co-signed with Representative Elijah Cummings and Coiners and I believe one other representative, basically kind of trying to address this problem and trying to claw back compensation from people if they, you know, prove to be sort of ineffective. And so we're seeing a little bit of movement, but does it surprise me? No, of course it doesn't surprise me. It's the same old story. I suppose what is a little bit surprising about this is how blatant they were. And I guess one thing people should know is last year there was a story by ProPublica that one of these consultants, Promontory, Bank of America gave them a cheat sheet. So they were supposed to review these tales of woe and tragedy about foreclosure and see whether or not the homeowner was wrongfully foreclosed on. And so there were a series of questions, you know, to try and determine that. Bank of America gave them a cheat sheet about what all the answers to the questions should be. Basically, they're trying to reverse engineer it to make themselves look like they were not at fault.
Yeah.
And Promontory just used that cheat sheet. So they're completely in bed with them. They're totally corrupt. They're basically criminal. The OCC probably has documentation of this, but they refuse to hand it over to the public.
Well, because that's where they're going to go work when their gig at the OCC's up.
Well, and that's a great point. Mary Shapiro, who used to head the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, which is one of the other regulators, just went to work at Promontory. Julie Williams, who used to work at the OCC, just went to work at Promontory. And you know what? The person whose job she took, that woman just went to go work for the OCC. So they just changed roles. So it's actually one of the most disgusting examples of the revolving door at work.
So let me ask you this. I think like most people do. I think we think that when you're wronged, you go to court and the court makes it right. You're made whole. There's a lot of people that actually think that, you know, if you were foreclosed on improperly, you go to court, you have your day in court because constitutionally we're guaranteed our day in court, and you're made whole if you were wronged. Yet what I'm hearing is $500 is not made whole. $5,000
mm-hmm.
not made whole.
And not only that, but you don't even have enough money to bring a second case to court with this paltry settlement. Because the homeowners that are getting the settlement could sue. They're not signing their rights away. But if you've been foreclosed on, you don't have money to even go to court in the first place. So it's just another example of the two-tier justice system where you have to be wealthy if you want to get justice.
Unless, as I pointed out, you're one of the service members and you've got the Department of Justice who goes after them. And I've said from the beginning, and look, I'm glad they did. I'm glad the Department of Justice went after Bank of America and made them pay these 316 service members who got screwed over $117,000 on average each plus costs. I'm happy as hell about that. But I'd like to see our Justice Department do that for every single American in this country and stand up for them and not these banks.
Well, and I should just mention really quickly that as a part of this settlement that we've been talking about, the OCC settlement, separate from the case you're talking about, there were over 1,000 service members in this settlement who were found to be illegally foreclosed on. And by the way, to violate, you know, the I forget what it stands for, SCRA, is basically, it's illegal to foreclose on a service member who's off an active duty.
The service members.
That's a criminal misdemeanor.
Yep.
And so is the OCC going to refer these cases to the Department of Justice? Are they going to throw people in jail for this? Because they should.
Yeah, they should. This is a violation of the Service Members Civil Relief Act, which, you know, and you can't do it, but they're getting away with it.
They really are. They're getting away with everything, and it's the same old story. But I think you're right. The answer is to break them up. And Senator Sherrod Brown and Senator Vitter just had a bill that was, I suppose it's a draft, but it's been leaked, that's taking a chunk of that and trying to address this too big to fail problem and to try to break them up to a certain extent. So that is one potential avenue for trying to address this.
You know, I look at this and, you know, I had a conversation with someone the other day who said, you know, the worst part of all of this, the most perverse part of this, with the home loan modification and all of this is that what we've done is we put the government seal on this. So you went and you applied for these loan modifications. You went through the process because, you know, the president's got these plans and you got all this stuff that's supposed to be helping you with the government seal on it. And then you ended up getting screwed. And who do you turn and point your finger at? You point it at the government, not the corporation that screwed you, not the one who set the situation up, but the program that was poorly run, poorly overseen, and poorly conceived.
Well, I do think the government has a role in it, but you're absolutely right. The banks are the real criminal here. I guess what I like to say is the OCC in particular is like the mob's cleanup crew. So they just clean up the bodies, you know, they wash it all down, they make it look okay. The banks are still the you know, the ones doing the hits.
So
murdering everybody, but the OCC is cleaning up the bodies.
So as a former VP at Merrill Lynch and Deutsche Bank, where do we go with this? I mean, you know, how do we fix these problems? Because I don't think the country moves forward until we solve the problem of all of these foreclosures, until we turn the housing market around.
I mean, I think we're starting to see this already, but we need the Republicans to get a clue. The Democrats don't have a clue either, but we need, you know, them to come to the table and say, listen, this is a problem and we need to break them up. And I suppose maybe you appeal to their vanity, right? Like people in Congress are super vain and say, listen, they're manipulating you too. And do you want to be manipulated? But we need to see some inroads, because otherwise it's just a road to serfdom.
Let me ask you, one of the things I've advocated for a long time is going back to the Glass-Steagall and putting that dividing line between gambling and banking and, mm-hmm. and having some sane regulations. Because I have a banker friend who said, he remembers when everything went haywire, especially in the housing market, when bankers were making loans based on the value of the property that they were loaning for. Instead of in the old days, like 20, 30 years ago, they were making loans on your ability to pay. The last, 10, 15 years, maybe 20, they were saying, well, how much is the property worth? When we take it back and we can resell it, we've got your money, plus we've got the property, we can make a lot of bank on this. Is there anything, any regulation, any way of fixing that?
I mean, I think there's not any one thing that's going to fix it, because these banks have gotten so big and they're so complicated that there isn't just one solution. I think we have to hit it from multiple angles. I think we need a return to something like Glass-Steagall. I think we need to force the banks to hold more of what's called capital, which is basically just most of these banks operate on something like 97% borrowed money.
Yep.
And please name me one other business that operates on 97% borrowed money. Like, chances are there aren't that many.
Could you argue that's a Ponzi scheme?
Right, yeah, exactly, basically. So there's this thing called capital requirements, and it just has to do with making them work with less borrowed money. So I think you need to do things with that. There's a piece of legislation that passed called the Volcker Rule that we're still waiting for regulators to finalize the rule on, that says that banks can't gamble, that they can't, the technical term is proprietary trading. We need a final rule on that. So I think, you have to take this multi-pronged approach. You need to reform derivatives and push them onto exchanges, which are more transparent and have recording and reporting and things that the public can know how many there are. Part of the reason we were so, screwed basically in the financial crisis is there were so many of those credit default swaps. Nobody realized how many there were. Nobody realized they were such a big problem because they were in this shadowy market. So I don't think there's one solution. I think there's like four or five, and they all have to work together, because these banks are just so big and powerful. They're basically like sovereign nations onto themselves.
Which is why I say you got to break them up and let them fail when they make,
right.
Make them have the responsibility that if they make bad choices, they fail. And they
exactly.
And the CEOs and the executives, they lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any CEOs going hungry. I don't see any Bank of America or Goldman Sachs. I don't see them on the food line. I see a lot.
Oh, I know, but Jamie Dimon lost half of his compensation, I guess, in the wake of some of these things, and I'm sure that made him suffer deeply, right? When he lost half of his $20 million and only got paid $10 million, I'm sure he suffered deeply for that, right?
He didn't get extra cheese on his Whopper, right? I understand.
Right.
But the reality is there are people who didn't even get a Whopper. They got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's infuriating to me, because Donald Trump never goes homeless. He just files bankruptcy and puts it off on other people. They lose their pensions. They lose their homes. They lose their jobs. The wealthy class of this country, they don't lose. They just push that pain and misery down onto the rest of us, which is at some point, I hope we wake up and start electing politicians who start saying enough already.
And you would think that the Republican Party would be behind this idea, because they claim to be behind government inefficiency and government incompetence, and they claim to be, for getting rid of corruption. But I don't see the Republicans going after the OCC for this gross incompetence. I don't see them saying anything. And Congresswoman Maxine Waters has asked the head of the Financial Services Committee in the House, this guy Jeb Hensarling, to have a hearing about the thing they had the hearing about in the Senate today, and I haven't heard anything from him, so I don't know if you have any listeners in Texas, but it's worth talking to Jeb Hensarling and saying, hey, if you're all about fighting government inefficiency, why don't you talk to the OCC? All they seem to do is bury the bodies for the banks. Why don't you have a hearing about that?
So what's our ask? What do we tell people to do on this?
I would tell them that if they're in Texas, or even if they're not, you could tweet at Rep. Hensarling. His last name is Hensarling. And ask him to have a hearing about the OCC's foreclosure settlement and how incompetent they are and how horribly they're slapping in the face the homeowners who were wrongfully foreclosed on by the banks. Why won't he talk about it? Why won't he have a hearing about it like they had in the Senate?
I'm with
you. Whose side is he on, you know?
Good question, and we will make sure that we do that as well. Alexis Goldstein, I appreciate the time. Great article. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, the article, Foreclosure Review Report, shows that the OCC continues to bury Wall Street's bodies over at The Nation. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Alexis Goldstein's name. Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Where you fit in, take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
I like the word lift. It implies upward progress and a can-do communal spirit. Yes, let's all put our backs into it and lift this load. It's so American. That's why I was intrigued to see the emergence of a new group called the Lift America Coalition. The acronym stands for Let's Invest for Tomorrow. And boy, is that overdue in everything from public education to development of a green economy. But then, I peeked behind the shiny Lift America logo and, uh-oh, there was Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, Eli Lilly, IBM, Intel, Pfizer, Procter & Gamble, Xerox, and, well, all the usual global giants that constantly want Washington to do special favors for them. Despite its uplifting name, Lift America is nothing but another corporate lobbying and PR front trying to dupe our Congress critters into giving them a lift. In particular, they're crying for a lower corporate tax rate, wailing about antiquated U.S. tax laws that are threatening America's economic competitiveness. Big bad government, they preach, has saddled these poor giants with a 35% tax bite. One of the highest of industrialized nations. So Congress must whack that rate to make America, quote, a more attractive place to invest and create jobs. Not so fast, Slick. First, these super-rich powerhouses are masters of the tax-dodging and loophole game. So the rate they actually pay is not 35%, but 12%. And many of them pay zero. Second, they've already slashed their commitment to America not only by offshoring jobs and eliminating our middle-class future, but also by reducing the percentage of our nation's revenue that corporations pay from 30% in the 1950s to less than 8% today. This is Jim Hightower saying, if corporations think Luxembourg is more attractive than America, move there.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Look, we know in days like yesterday and today, we have a lot of work to do. We got to make sure that we work with our counterparties, our clients, to get the answers they want, and we're pursuing that as we speak. And we're also exploring other alternatives, such as strategic investments, or investors and other financing alternatives. So we have work to do, and we're doing it right now.
What exactly does that mean?
I don't know exactly what that means. I just made it up as we were talking. And then, but look, you know, we've made mistakes, and we're going to try not to in the future. But we'll try. Trust us. Checks in the mail. And you know, the thing that gets me is, and I go back to that time, right when the collapse happened, And the ideas that I had right at the very beginning were not, you know, I'm not some great, you know, economic genius. There are simple things that you do. There are simple common sense things. One of them is when you have a situation where the banks got so big that they collapsed and were taking the rest of us with them. Wouldn't you think, just help me here, because, you know, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Wouldn't you think if they were so big and so large that they were, when they were going down, they were taking all of us with them, not just here in the U.S., but across the globe, wouldn't you think that you'd go, well, wait a second. Sounds like you're too much of a liability, too much of a weight for us to bear. We should be breaking this up. Instead of doing that, instead of saying, well, we're going to break things up and make them smaller, more regional, more local, what we did is we allowed them to get bigger. In fact, they used the money that we gave them to settle their books to then go out and buy other banks. More consolidation, which has made another situation. And look, this is where, you know, I am concerned about the future of the country, the globe, really. Because we've got so much in the hands of so few. And Alexis is right. We've got a Ponzi scheme in the banking system because, you know, they used to have so much in reserves, you know, so that if you had a run on the banks, they would have some money. It's not there. They've lowered that and they keep reloaning that money based on the asset. What happens when the asset is devalued? Well, you have what we had. You had a collapse. And they say, well, you know, it's FDIC insured. So you got these bankers who come up with these schemes based on, hey, we can gamble and we can make big returns if everything goes right. And if not, well, you know, all the people whose money is in the banks, covered by the government. Covered, which is why the radical right says, no, we shouldn't have FDIC insurance. And you people at the bottom, you know, you should lose everything when the bankers destroy the economy. There's only like $25 billion in the FDIC insurance pool. We've got trillions of dollars worth of liability. Think of how much power we're giving the handful. That's what scares me. And look, you know, earlier in the program, we had a guy call saying, look, you know, Paul Craig Roberts saying the end of the world's coming. You know, the economy's, you know, the dollar's going to collapse and the globe's going to go down the tank. And I've read those stories, you know, for the last several years. And while it's conceivably possible, we should be thinking about how to make sure that it doesn't happen. Get our house in order. Look, I'm all for paying our bills. I'm all for balancing our budget in good times. But here's the thing. And I go back to this often because, you know, every person that you have a conversation with face to face, it's easy to shout slogans at each other. It's easy to, you know, to talk in platitude. But almost to a person. You talk face-to-face, and you say, well, what do you do in your household? Because the Republicans love to throw this back on them. Well, kitchen table economics. So what do? Do you turn off the light? Do you turn the heat off in the winter because you don't have the money? Or maybe do you pull in a little extra revenue if you have that option? And we have that option. Understand, there's a class of very, very wealthy people that we've created. And I love this argument. Well, you just want the rich people to pay everything. No, I want them to pay for what they use, and that they've benefited from our investment in roads and education and infrastructure, that we've invested in court systems, patent laws, all of the things that, well, most normal people don't use very much, but we pay for, we fund, we've invested, we've created. What I see, and I go back and I think about my uncle, who was a very wealthy person. You've got this very patriarchal vision that the wealthy, well, they're wealthy, so they must know something. Not that they were in the right place at the right time, and they had some good breaks, and they had some lucky moves, and they worked hard like a lot of people, but I know a lot of people who bust their behinds and struggle and work hard every day. But this view that, well, somehow they know how to run things. Let them. like our education system. Sorry, Bill Gates may be a great guy at running Microsoft. I don't know what he knows about running a high school or running an elementary school. Nor do I want him to have that power. Just a thought. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Another one of those stories, one of those family values. You got to love family values, or at least contract law on some level. A same-sex couple in the hospital. Guy's in the hospital, his partner's there, wants to be with the person who's in the hospital. A family member says, we want you to leave. Problem is that the guy's got power of attorney, a actual legal signed document. Guess who got arrested and taken away? And you wonder why there is such a push for this marriage equality. It makes absolutely no sense to me, and the fact that the hospital it just blows my mind. Anyway, let's go to Washington, D.C. and find out what's going on in D.C. and around the world. I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you so much.
So, what's going on in the big city there?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I think the top of the hit parade is the gun legislation that your very own senator from Pennsylvania is working on with former governor, but now Senator Manchin of West Virginia.
Guns.
And it looks like there is, in fact, some real legislation that's coming. They don't have the wording yet. They got the votes necessary to get it on the floor for real debate, 68-31, with Begich of Arkansas and Pryor of Arkansas voting with the Democrats. 16 Republicans voted with the Democrats. I'm sorry, Begich and Pryor voted with the Republicans. 16 but. Republicans voting with the Democrats for cloture. And they say they are going to allow amendments, but they're not going to get crazy with them, says Harry Reid.
So, but basically, I mean, I don't see there being any will in the House to pass this, so is there a lot to be excited about here?
No. I mean, I don't see a lot of will in the House, but on the other hand, they do have an election coming up in a year and a half, and I don't think they want to be seeing no on background checks. Now, some areas of red states are happy to do that, but
yeah, and I'm waiting to see the loopholes that you can drive a Mack truck through.
Well, that's right. And the two the two loopholes that have people most concerned is one, selling to a family member without a background check. That certainly would have happened in Newtown, although she probably gave it to him or left the gun doors unlocked or whatever. And secondly, is if you don't want to buy something at a gun show, well, can you just say to somebody, hey, meet me at the 7-Eleven in 2 hours, and then you won't have to have that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is I know several people who are lifelong NRA members, and you know, law-abiding gun owning, you know, owners that, who believe that we should have stronger background checks. There should be, we should know where the guns are, and you should have some responsibility. While it's a right, it's also a responsibility, don't you think?
Yes, and just like owning a car is.
Well, you know,
right?
I've made that argument, but they say, well, you don't have a right to own a car.
Right, but in fact, that isn't in the Second Amendment. However, we require all kinds of registration for all of this.
Yeah, I have the right to own a car. I may not have a right to drive it, but I have a right to own it. Just a thought.
Right.
So let's find out some good gun news then. Syria, I guess we're going to be selling them guns soon, right?
Well, we might be selling them guns. The issue is that they have a lot of guns, and they have now, looks like, through actually aerial assaults, they have killed 4,300 people just from aerial assaults. We're not even talking about the ground war.
And how do they calculate that?
What they did is they went and they talked to something like 140, 150 people, and they were people who actually in each area had seen these people, had seen the body, has counted the body. You know, they know people who do that kind of thing.
Right. So, but I saw the statement by Bob Menendez, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who said, you know, hey, we need to be arming the rebels in Syria.
Well, I understand, and there is going to be a lot of that. But, you know, I was in Syria, as I think I've talked to you about, almost 10 years ago, and it was a very multicultural society. And the fact is that sometimes when you get rid of these dictators, you don't like when you get what you get after you get rid of them. I think, you know, just like the Arab Spring, it's not so easy.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. See where they go there. Let's go to another problem, North Korea. So will the missile thing not happen?
Well, the question is, yes, they have apparently put their missile in place. Do they have a nuclear weapon on it? The United States does not think so. And so if they lob a missile, well, if they obviously lob it into South Korea, it's a big problem. And they're going to have a huge response. If they lob it into some island near Japan, well, yeah, nobody's going to be very happy. They will get something, you know, going after them on it. But it's not quite the same as lobbing it somewhere else.
No, I mean, I look at this and I go, you know, what's the end game? I mean, you know, there's part of me that goes, well, you know, they do the saber rattling, and you can it's all well timed because they, you know, they want oil or they want food or they want something, and we generally give it to them and they shut up and go away for a little bit until the next time they do it.
Exactly. I always say these were his fundraising trips.
yeah. Well, maybe we need to send Dennis Rodman back.
Yeah, that'll do a lot of good, right?
There's something seriously wrong when he's our top diplomat in the area.
Well, and you know something, it's true that Secretary Madeleine Albright actually went there.
Really?
Yes, she was the highest sitting member, I mean obviously people have been there since, who has actually gone to North Korea.
Hmm. I have no interest in going to North Korea.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
First of all, it's cold.
No, and poverty-ridden, except if you get to stay in the mansion, where I guess they've got a lot of American movies and some basketball stuff. Because that's what Kim Jong-il was big. If you remember several years back, they sent him a Michael Jordan basketball, signed basketball, and a ton of American movies. Evidently, he was a big fan.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Along with him having, you know, I think was it 8 or 9 hole-in-ones in the first time he played golf and the first time he bowled, he had a 300 game and a whole bunch of things that, you know, that supposedly the grand exalted leader had done because he was a gift from above.
Wow.
Also on the international front, did Jay-Z get permission from the White House? This is a peering question we really want to know. It's so important.
Isn't that like, give me a break?
There are so many things that we're not talking about, like jobs, for instance, infrastructure.
Like 100 things, right?
But, you know, the big news, I keep saying, did he go to Cuba? Did the White House, did Obama give him a pass?
Well, it's clear Obama didn't. And as Jay Carney said today, it doesn't rhyme. White House doesn't rhyme. Maybe Treasury basically does. I don't think those were exact words, but that's pretty much what he said.
Nice. And I guess President Obama had dinner with 12 senators. Maybe he's going to send them to Cuba?
Maybe. Although, you know, Cuba did cooperate with us on that couple that had abducted their own children.
True.
And tried to take them to Cuba.
I saw a story today that Castro visited a school that they opened. And I guess in Cuba, they're opening schools. Here across our country, we're closing them and selling them off for cheap real estate.
Well, you saw Michael Moore's movie on the healthcare there.
Yeah, well,
and it's very interesting, you know, on some of the Caribbean medical schools, a lot of the physicians are trained in Cuba.
Well, I mean, that's one of their trading commodities. They trade.
That's right.
They trade doctors for oil with Venezuela.
They have good medical care. Let's face it.
It's because they
maybe it, that's how they've been able to keep Castro alive.
Well, there you go. And I guess. Wiener's looking to run again?
He won't run for mayor.
Good for him.
Can you imagine?
He couldn't be any...
Right.
Who I'm not a fan of. And
a lot of people aren't. And, you know, a lot of people think she's going to win.
Yeah, well...
It's staggering.
It is. Unless Bloomberg decides, I'm not giving up, I'm going to run for a fourth term. Because
I don't see that that's going to happen.
I don't either, but I didn't think he could run for a third.
I didn't either, but he got the law changed.
There you go. So maybe a fourth. Who knows? I doubt it, though. And lastly, Marco Rubio's chief of staff using the social medias to talk about immigration.
That's right. I mean, supposedly, according to John McCain, there's absolutely not going to be any actual plan until Monday. And what Rubio's chief of staff is doing is, you know, sort of sending out via social media what might be or what probably is going to be in the bill.
Yeah, I mean, is this the trial balloon? Are they just throwing that out there to see what sticks? How people react?
We don't know. I mean, but it sounds like he's trying to give his people sort of the leg up.
All right. Well, we'll see how where that takes us. It should be interesting. I really want to know if we're going to be chipping immigrant workers. Because that was one of the proposals during the Bush years, and I wonder how close this immigration bill is going to look to the Bush thing, since everything else Obama does seems to be in tune with what the Bush administration wanted to do. You look at the tax cuts, you look at the social. I don't even think Bush wanted to cut Social Security.
I don't think. Well, you know, actually, very early in his first term, they tried to fix it. "Quote unquote," right?
Well, they tried to privatize it. I remember that, but they never talked about actually.
And they had all his PR, because I know some of the PR people were involved in this, out at the Treasury Department, and they were doing this and that and the other, and it backfired miserably. And they didn't try it again in the second time around.
I thought that was his big push the second term, right? When he got all that capital.
Well, maybe it wasn't.
He went around with the filing cabinet.
It may have been at the beginning of the second term, but yeah. In any case, it dropped very quickly.
He went around with the filing cabinet saying Social Security is nothing but a bunch of ow yous. I remember that as clear as day.
Right. Well, guess what? It's gone away. I mean, and it will. And I don't understand why Obama's attacking that. I just don't.
It seems to me like he wants the Democrats in the House to be the minority forever.
Well, I have a guy, a friend of mine, who writes all these blogs and everything sort of from the middle. I don't think anybody much reads them, but he's a very bright guy. And he basically said Obama doesn't want his party to control Congress. It's a lot better to be on the outside than having to deal with your own guys.
Yeah, but the problem is you...
Politically, I'm not talking about what's good for the people.
Yeah, well, politically, okay. Yeah. I mean, when you're playing the game, absolutely.
That's right.
I agree, because then nothing gets done, and you can point the finger at everybody else. I get that. But from my perspective, I'd actually like to see something get done. I would like to drive over a bridge and not worry it's going to collapse. I'd like to send my kids to school and have them get a good quality education instead of this nonsensical testing them like crazy. Just a thought.
Well, yes. I mean, I completely agree with you. And the problem is, again, that he, you know, it was interesting. The president had dinner last night with members of Congress, but they were all Republicans. Well, put a couple Democrats on that.
Well, I mean, he's trying to, the olive branch, right? Trying to reach across the aisle so they
right.
can slap him away?
But then get your Dems so that everybody's reaching in the same space.
Yeah, well... again, I'm just about ready to rip out my hair over this chain CPI thing.
Well, everybody is.
Just
you know, if you can, you should try and get somebody from Bernie Sanders, if not Bernie Sanders' office, to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
I know they're just wild.
As we all should be. And I've been saying, you call early, call often, send letters. Don't do like the guy from Pennsylvania who went to the White House and said he had a bomb in the truck. Don't do that. But, you know, call, right, all of that stuff. Ellen, it's always great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Hi, my name is Ethan. My dad is a sanitation worker at Republic Services. My dad spends a lot of time away from home doing the fourth most dangerous job in America, but he is invisible at work, and Republic Services does not treat him with the respect he deserves. Support us on Facebook at facebook.com/Republic Services Teamsters. Thank you.
Earth, sky.
You often hear the mass of our Milky Way galaxy is equal to several hundred billion stars, like our sun.
Now, some astronomers are suggesting more mass for our Milky Way, 1.6 trillion suns.
The new estimate is based on the first ever measurement of the proper motion, or sideways motion, of a small satellite galaxy to our Milky Way. Our galaxy has some two dozen known satellite galaxies. This one is called LEO 1.
If you knew the size of the orbits of these Milky Way satellites, their speeds in orbit, and how long they take to orbit our galaxy, you could use the laws of physics to calculate the amount of mass in the Milky Way. But our human lifespans are short in contrast to the lifespans and motions of the galaxies, so these numbers are hard to come by.
Astronomers used the Hubble Space Telescope to compare LEO 1's position in 2006 and 2011 with more than 100 background galaxies to obtain the first measurement of its proper motion. Then they used that number to estimate that LEO 1 orbits at 200 kilometers per second, nearly as fast as our sun.
But LEO 1 is much farther away than our sun from the galaxy's center, and that means the Milky Way must be much more massive than previously believed. The new mass estimate is 1.6 trillion solar masses. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Milky Way mass. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alerts.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember when the Republicans used to talk about jobs, jobs, jobs? Remember that? Remember when they used to say that they cared about jobs? Remember they had that little pledge thing that they rolled out in 2010 where they said, oh, we're going to create jobs. That's what we care about. We're going to go get away from that divisive stuff. We're talking about jobs. That was 2010. 2010. Here we are, 2013. Still no jobs bill. Understand that. But in the first 3 months of this year, according to the Guttmacher Institute, they've come out with a new report. that in the first 3 months of this year, legislators across the country have introduced 694 pieces of legislation devoted to reproductive health and women's rights. 694. 93 of them have been approved by at least one body of the legislature, be it abortion bans, be it limiting the ability to get medication, be it birth control, Plan B, whatever. Anything on sexual education, you know, throwing down the gauntlet on abstinence only, because, you know, we know how well that works. Texas, with one of the highest teen pregnancy rates. Rick Perry just says, you know, when no abstinence works, we're just not applying it right. Yes, you're just not applying it right. You've forgotten to take into the fact that they're teenagers. But I look at that, man. You think about this for a second. Think about it. 694 pieces of legislation have been introduced across the country. 694. Just think if there were 694 jobs bills. Maybe we would have people back to work. And if you look last Friday, a federal judge ordered the Food and Drug Administration to remove the current restrictions on the morning after pill, the Plan B morning after pill, so that women of all ages could access the drug over the counter. The Obama administration, not so thrilled about it. They didn't want it for access for people under the age of 17. The judge ordered the federal agency to reverse its decision to have access to folks under 17. Not going to happen. His decision will be appealed to the Second Circuit, which evidently is one of the more liberal courts in the country. So we'll see what happens. But what I find interesting is the Obama administration is claiming that, well, you know, it could be too dangerous for young women to use. Maybe if we educated them, just a thought, maybe if you gave them the educational tool, maybe if you just said, hey, this is your body. And understand, girls mature much quicker. Why? Because they have to. Already had those beginning of those talks with my 10-year-old. Those days are coming. She's going to be responsible for her body. Maybe if we grew up as a society and said, you know what, maybe we get them to take care of themselves, maybe they will. And I look at France, for instance, where France is now saying that they will reimburse 100% of the costs of abortions for girls 15 to 18. And girls in that age bracket, they get free and anonymous birth control. Think about how insane the right wing in this country would go if that were what would have happened here. No, what we do, folks, 694 pieces of legislation across the country, limiting access to education, limiting access to reproductive health care, just insane. Here's some good news. The Republicans love to talk about regulation, want to talk to the president. Well, a guy from Pennsylvania, truck driver, I guess, 44-year-old guy on Wednesday morning, about 5 a.m., walked up to a Secret Service officer and said, I want to talk to the president. At the White House, figured, yeah, you go walk up to the security gate and say, I want to talk to the president. You got to imagine that the guy who's working at that gate's got to have pretty thick skin. Got to go, you know, hey, buddy, take it somewhere else. According to reports, according to the court affidavit, you know this is not good when you hear there's a court affidavit. According to the court affidavit, the guy was upset. This truck driver, 44-year-old guy, upset that, you know, rules, regulations concerning semi-trucks, was angry about fines he had to pay for whatever he had done. He told the Secret Service office that he wanted to talk to the president, and that he had a bomb in his truck. Had a bomb in his truck. Want to talk to the president. Got a bomb. So the Secret Service agent goes, hey, man, you know, tell it to whatever agency. And he walked away. Left the guy standing there going, I got a bomb. So the guy comes back. I mean, you got away with it once. Wouldn't you just go, okay, I'm going to give up? Not this Pennsylvania resident. No, no. He comes back. He says, I know what it takes to get things done around here, mister. He said, I've got a bomb in my truck parked 500 feet from here. And he said, I don't care if children or veterans are harmed by the bomb. I only care about speaking to the president. Well, he got a nice set of bracelets. And now he has a court date and has been charged with making terroristic threats. And I'm sure there will be quite a laundry list of charges to go along with that. Here's some good news out of Mississippi. I'm sure the folks in Tupelo, Mississippi are thrilled by the fact that Carol, the 39-year-old Asian elephant that is owned by the good folks at Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. I shouldn't say that. I don't know if they're good folks or not. I've heard a lot of rotten things. But anyway, Carol, the 39-year-old Asian elephant, was the victim of a drive-by shooting in Tupelo, Mississippi. PETA, the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, said that they are offering $5,000 for any leads that would arrest and convict the person who you drive by and you shoot an elephant. What the hell is wrong with people? And you wonder why there's a call for gun control. And as we saw today, 68-31 to move forward with the background checks and a couple of the other, the cracking down on the straw purchasing and a little bit of beefing up of school security. You had, as we said before, 16 Republicans who went along with the cloture vote. Two Democrats, one from Alaska, one from Arkansas, who both are up for re-election. They have said, no, we're going to go with the Republicans on this. We're going to go with the anti-Republicans. And here's the reality. As I said before, you're going to see it go over to the House. I don't see that there's any will in the House to pass this. It'll pass the Senate. It's going to go to the House. I just don't see any will. In fact, the radical right is now, going after Boehner saying, oh, you better kill this. You better not let it go to the floor. You better follow the Hastert rule. And not even bring it up. In fact, one of the representatives, a representative from Texas, a guy named Steve Stockman, he and 40 Republicans are passing around a Dear Colleague letter asking not to bring the bill up to expand the background checks. And my favorite crazy woman, Michelle Bachmann, right there front and center. And finally, Ann Coltergeist, who I just think is kind of nuts to begin with. But she's the hey, look at me person. She was commenting on Elijah Cummings, the Democrat from Maryland, who was on MSNBC with Martin Bashir. And he was talking about the gun control issue and said, hey, look, I've had a nephew who's been shot and killed. It was several years ago. And Bashir said, hey, is this what it's going to take? Is it going to take, people like you, this stuff happening? What you've got now is you've got the right wing of the country going, well, he was saying that they should go kill people, which took Ann Coulter all about 6 seconds to write her piece where she said it would be funny and thought it was funny to suggest that John McCain's daughter be the first one to be shot and killed. She wrote that MSNBC's Martin Bashir suggested that Republican senators need to have a member of their families killed for them to support the Democrats' gun proposal. Coulter went on to write, let's start with Meghan McCain. Meghan McCain said she was out of line. Coulter was out of line. She said in her Twitter account, apparently Ann Coulter made a joke about me being killed in a recent comment. I should expect nothing less but disgust regardless. Cindy McCain, the mother of Meghan, said, well, Ann Coltergeist needs to get a life. And I agree. Thanks for listening. Now, get up, get active, get engaged. Meeting adjourned. We got work to do. Let's get to it. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming like the tide flood beneath the
gonna sway. Imperial, mysterious, and